Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Cade. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born-and-bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! That was a real edge of your seat story, Mark. Appreciate that. What more proof do you need that the terror of the American people is manipulated not nearly so much by a 6-foot-6-inch Arab in a cave in Pakistan somewhere wheeling around a portable dialysis machine as it is by a jug-eared, pig-eyed little lout sitting at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue and his evil minions? I don't need any more proof. I'm convinced. I'm convinced of a lot of things, though, and you know that. I got further conviction today that Justices Scalia, Alito, Roberts, Thomas, and in this instance Kennedy, are a bunch of creepy thugs. What do I mean? Well, here's what I mean. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about this John Yoo business. It was the John and Dave morning Yoo crew in the Congress today is John Yoo, who looks, he's got a baby face. He just looks so innocent. As he and David Addington went to the House Judiciary Committee to, as Obama noted in regard to James Dobson, make stuff up. We'll hit that somewhere along the way. But my inclination is to start the show this evening with a little something-something called District of Columbia et al. V. Heller. That case was released by the Supreme Court today. And you don't have to be a highfalutin legal mind to realize that the way this opinion came about is that Slappy Thomas and Fat Tony Scalia and Sammy the Weasel Alito and John Roberts and Anthony Kennedy all got some orange barrel sunshine acid, dropped it together, watched the walls melt, and then decided to write an opinion that would, you know, kill lots of Americans. Especially in the District of Columbia. Finally, after studiously avoiding the whole blessed thing for the most part, for over 200 years, the Supreme Court of the United States has finally issued a definitive statement on the meaning of the Second Amendment to the Constitution. And in reaching that decision, it's a decision that only could have been reached by people who were profoundly impaired by psychoactive psychedelic drugs. because they had to take the language that's the language I love so dearly, the English language, which can be so precise or imprecise based upon the wishes of the writer, took the English language out behind the barn and bludgeoned it to death. You know, a couple of weeks ago, the fat Tony Scalia dissented in the Guantanamo Bay case. I forget the name, sorry. And he said, there is no doubt but what this here opinion of this here majority, it was going to cause Americans to be killed. There is no doubt. Because already we have released people from the Guantanamo Bay prison camp without first whacking them. And they have gone back on the battlefield. And they have subsequently fought against Americans all over again. He said that. And then Seton Hall University's law school came out and stone busted him. In very pretty English that's kind of used in the salons and, you know, in the cocktail party circuit. The Seton Hall University law school said, hey, Fat Tony, you're an effing liar. You lied in your dissent there about how all them Americans was going to get killed. Well, the problem is, Fat Tony wrote the opinion of the court today in District of Columbia versus Heller. And they struck down D.C.'s otherwise successful ban on handguns inside the district. And they struck down a trigger lock provision, Fat Tony did, and Sammy the Eel Alito, and Clarence Slappy Thomas, and John Whitebread Roberts, and Anthony Swingman Kennedy. Struck down the trigger lock, struck down the ban on handgun ownership, and actually opened the door for some right-wing militia member nut job to come along and say that the Second Amendment permits him to own a fully automatic submachine gun, by God. And you know what? Unlike the made-up crap that Fat Tony wrote a couple of weeks ago, this decision really will get Americans killed. Because this decision doesn't just apply to upstanding law-abiding white people and upstanding law-abiding African Americans and upstanding law-abiding Native Americans and upstanding law-abiding... You get the idea. This is the kind of legal fantasy land stuff that gets people killed, because this is gonna serve to put handguns back on the streets of the District of Columbia, where there are already enough illegal ones in the first place. This will just make it easier to possess, easier to use. Whether it is I read a statistic one time. Well, I didn't read a statistic. I had a cop friend tell me most shootings that don't involve the police, most shootings take place in a space of less than 3 feet. Most shootings also involve handguns. And people are going to die in D.C. because of the words of Fat Tony Scalia and the connivance of Sammy the Eel Alito and Clarence Slappy Thomas and John Whitebread Roberts and Anthony Swingman Kennedy. People are going to die. Mothers are going to collapse on front steps when the news is brought that the child that they carried in their womb and tried to raise up from birth has been gunned down as in some randomized shooting. Maybe wasn't even involved in the actual process, but just happened to be struck by a stray bullet flying from one of the guns that Fat Tony Scalia says that everybody has a right to have. And oh yeah, they did. They took the English language out behind the barn and just beat the piss out of it. Yes, right, Bob. I took the English language out behind a building and I whacked it. Me and the eel and Slappy and White Bread and the Swing Man. What you gonna do about it, Bob, huh? You and whose army? Unlike the phony, dummied up, faked up, rubed up, ginned up, garbage that he published a couple of weeks ago, this one is going to have real-time, real-life tears attached to it, and heartbreak that lasts a lifetime, and the rending of garments, and the weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth, and the tearing of the hair. This one's going to have all of that going for it, Fat Tony, but that's okay. You live in a gated community somewhere, in a house that you bought that had a clause that says, I hereby promise by purchasing this property never to sell it to a Negro or a Jew. Yeah, you did that, didn't you, Fat Tony? You're damn right you did. This is going to have real-time repercussions. It was a rational, reasonable response to a profound problem in the District of Columbia. But instead, Fat Tony and Sammy the Eel and John Whitebread and Clarence Slappy and Anthony the Swingman have done everything in their power to turn the streets of the District of Columbia red with blood and make it into something approaching Dodge City or Tombstone. But that's okay, because the next shooting that comes along, we'll say things like, well, it's probably the Prozac! Yeah. 9mm Prozac. Thanks. Thanks, Fat Tony. From the deepest depths of the heart of mothers all over the District of Columbia who will bury their babies because of you, I say thanks. You thug. You common criminal. You monstrous goon. Oh, there's some real beautiful garbage in this opinion, and we'll get to it, but let's go to the phones. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
What's up, Albert?
Yeah, you know how it is. You know, when you read this and when you see what Scalia has done, or just the court has done, it almost, I don't know, maybe it's just the paranoia in me, but I almost sense that whole George Bush little baggie of crack that he just bought across the bay, you know. I look at it as like a rallying call, you know, to get their base mobilized to vote, you know.
Well, no, it's okay. Here, let me clear that up for you real quick, because it is not paranoia, all right?
Okay.
Let me share with you, if you don't mind, Albert, the statement of John McCain. John McCain lauded the decision in a written statement, calling it a landmark victory for Second Amendment freedom in the United States. The Republican presidential hopeful criticized his rival Barack Obama's stance on the issue, saying the Democrat had refused to sign a statement calling for Thursday's ruling.
My friends, unlike the elitist view that believes Americans cling to guns out of bitterness, today's ruling recognizes that gun ownership is a fundamental right, sacred, just as the right to free speech and assembly.
That's right. John McCain said today, Albert, that the right to own a gun is a right conferred by Almighty God.
Well, that's what
if you need a break to go crack a beer, that's okay. I understand, believe me.
Yeah, but that's what the people, that's how they talk, the people. You know, that is, you know, it, you know, honestly, It's such a because terminology like that can be used, it's such a losing issue. It turns into this brutal war of attrition. And I think people with our hearts, where our hearts are, and how our hearts and minds can communicate and realize, like, hey, you know, how do you think your mother would feel to bury you just because of some random act of violence? You know, we have to flank them. We just have to flank them. We almost, in a sense, we have to climb the higher mountain and try to eliminate all causes and reasons for people even using them. Like, seriously, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the only way I can see victory in this, is if we step above it and pull them with us. That's the only way.
Well, see, you know, I'm a rationalist where this stuff is concerned, Albert, because I recognize that there is a difference between the District of Columbia or Detroit or St. Louis or L.A. or Chicago or Dallas.
Certainly.
And rural Wisconsin or rural West Virginia.
Certainly.
Because yeah, in both of the latter instances, people are absolutely bug spray crazy over guns. I mean, I know people here in the state, and this is not an exaggeration, okay? I got friends who invest in guns.
Yep.
All right? They don't purchase guns. They invest in them. And they've got them in safes that are thicker than some bank vaults.
Yep.
And the fact of the matter is, because this is a gun-crazed nation, I knew a guy who paid $10,000 for a Browning side-by-side shotgun. And when he pulled it out and showed it to me, he said, you know what it's worth right now? I said, what's that? He says, it's worth $30,000.
Yeah, well.
And you know what? It's almost, that those firearms are almost as liquid as gold in terms of fungibility.
Well, they certainly do represent power. And yeah,
they represent ready access to cash, because in places like where you are and where I am, there's always somebody wants to buy a gun. And they're not criminals, you know. But I'm like I said, Albert. I'm a rationalist. I recognize, and of course, you know, the hardcores around here, you hate America when I say that, you know, you don't need a fully automatic machine gun to hunt Bambi. That in fact, the sport of hunting Bambi is probably reduced to its most satisfying and most thrilling when it's done with a bow or a muzzle loader, where you got one shot.
Or even an addle-addle.
Oh, well, addle-addle would be fun. You know what I think next deer season? I'm going to go after Bambi with a boomerang.
See, you're not allowed to use an addle-addle over here.
I don't doubt it. You're not allowed to. Oh, there's all kinds of squirrely regulations on stuff like that. But I'm a rationalist about it, I've hunted deer, okay? I've gone hunting, and it's fun. And I've sat on a brisk November morning on a Monday before Thanksgiving on a hillside where we knew that they would be coming up about 200 yards away, all scoped out and sighted in, waiting, and, you know, the little antlers come up above the hill first, and you're like, holy crap, and, you know, it's called buck fever around here, because, you know, you shake and you sweat, and it's like, holy cow, because it's a stunning experience. And I know the animal rights lovers are probably just, like, thinking this is pornographic at this point, but this is reality. This is, you know, the rural hunting in rural culture is hunting, fishing, hiking, ginsenging, mushroom hunting, this is traditional Appalachian culture. But that morning that I'm describing, Albert, as Bambi's antlers came up above the ridgeline, all of a sudden we heard blam 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 blam.
Yeah.
And Bambi ran away. And then we heard as he took off chasing Bambi on his four-wheeler.
Well,
and my buddy looks at me and goes, you know, if he's back down at the road when we get back down to the road, I may punch him. But that's the dichotomy that struck here. You know.
Well, I agree. And, you know, not to get much, but I also notice how during hunting seasons, I've never experienced that. Most I do is fishing. But
well, I've never killed a deer. I've shot a bunch of birds, but I've never killed a deer.
Yeah, just fish. And I'll tell you, you know, and they wouldn't have to worry about no child rapist if something like that ever happened to me, because there wouldn't be no police involved, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
That is a different story. But at the same time, like I also noticed during hunting season, that's when there's tons of deer by the side of the road because jerk-offs like that guy are out there chasing them around and shooting at them. And, you know, it's unbelievable. But it's like, you know, you actually think of the costs. You know, I'm just, you know.
Oh, around here we call it road hunting, and it is specifically illegal, Albert.
Oh, yeah.
And that's these horses' asses who drive down rural country roads that have open shots into pastures, and they usually use either the really good ones use a .22, the really just crack shots. But most of the time it's a fairly short .30-30 carbine, because you can just pop that right out of the side window of your pickup truck on the passenger side and shoot Bambi and go. And that's what they do. They shoot the deer and they go. They don't want the meat. They don't want the fur. They don't want the hide. They don't want nothing. They don't even want the rack. They just shoot the deer and go because they're into the killing.
See? It gets addicting. Like gambling and anything else. You know, it's just like you were talking about, that whole rush that's coming at you. That's what that is. It's like the, you know, your endorphins and everything else that starts flowing, and people do. They get hooked on that crap. And that's just, see, that's disgusting to me. I don't even like people sitting up in a tree, you know, in terms of hunting. But that's, you know, that's my own opinion.
But these jackasses on the court, Albert, have opened the door for more of those guys, and blam, 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 blam. And my buddy looked up and said, that's right, Daryl, melt the barrel. Melt the barrel, Daryl. Because, you know, barrels do get hot.
Yeah, they do.
And these jackasses have opened the door for, you know, hunting with your Tech 9. Brrt, brrt, brrt. I stitched Bambi Goodwin that time. Dang, missed. That's all right. I got another 150 round.
Well, I never said it was an easy mountain. But I think it's the way to go. I mean, even hunting ethics. You know, man, if you're going to hunt something, eat it.
Well, there's that.
Or donate it. Or what have you. You know, and honestly, you know, I know there's plenty of deer, but I guess, you know, out here where we live in Wisconsin, I don't know how West Virginia does it. I know you guys have coal as your main industry, and that's all I ever hear coming out of you guys, and it's not fair, but that's all I really hear. And, you know, but out here, you know, deer and, you know, our animals are, you know, heavily regulated because, you know, people do some shining, man. Man, you can get a big, 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 big ticket if you're caught driving down the road in your pickup truck with a 1,000, you know, million power candlelight. Yeah, you can get in some big trouble.
Oh, yeah, spotlighting. Yeah, that's big trouble here, too.
Yeah. Well, that's a tough one. I mean, what they're talking about, though, they're talking about, you know, they just like stirring up fear in the populace, Bob. They just like it, you know.
But you know what? Do they not understand? Do they not understand that it's a two-way street? You know, I'm at this point, after this decision, I'm going to go ahead and be a jackass myself. I want the next case to be I want a fully automatic submachine gun, and I have a right to have one under the Second Amendment. Because if you apply this case to that question, the answer is by two.
But Bob.
And I want Fat Tony and Sammy the Eel and Clarence Slappy and John Whitebread and Swingman Tony, I want those guys going, what the hell have we done? Because hard cases make bad law.
Yeah, that does, huh? Yeah, they gotta feed their teeming hordes, you know. They gotta feed their zombies, and you know. It's a tough one. I mean, if you want to, honestly, Bob, I think, you know, if I wanted to get a fully automatic machine gun and you had the money, that means you'd have the money to get the FFL, and that means you could do it. You could just get one of those little, you know, be a gunsmith in your own basement, make money.
Well, my buddy the investor, he had his FFL, his federal firearms license. Mm-hmm. And so he bought everything at wholesale. Mm-hmm. And you know, dude used to turkey hunt with a grenade launcher, okay? I kid you not. And he couldn't buy the real grenades, so he built his own.
Oh, well. See, I don't know if people like that make me feel safe. Well, they make me just...
Well, this guy was the right kind of sane, or the right kind of crazy, I should say, so I didn't get real nervous. But the country's full of them. And some of them aren't good crazy. Some of them are bad crazy.
Yeah, well, look at what they did out in Idaho. You know, this is...
Ruby Ridge!
Well, see, my mom lives out there. Seriously, my mom lives. She moved out there. It is beautiful, but I would been there, done that, not ever doing that one again. But the things that those people told me, the cloud of water that surrounded the earth, which is before the flood. And
you mean the one that protected people against the radiation that allowed them to live to be 912 years old?
Yes.
Yeah, that ain't just in Idaho, Albert.
Oh, I know, but there are a lot there, at least in my experience. Yeah, like
they're more highly concentrated.
Yeah, it's really super high concentrated.
It's like frozen orange juice.
for super frozen cranberry juice is more like it. They're crazy out there. I'm sorry, they're crazy out there. But you know, like for example, now you know as well as I do. Nobody, if you've ever hit I call them road rats out here. Because if you ever hit a deer, it's not a fun time. It just sucks, period. And, you know, it does kill people, and people get into big accidents and all this other stuff. And so that's one of the justifications for going out and hunting. They're like, oh, well, you know, we got to get the population down, you know. Now, I don't even know how many deer we pull in Wisconsin a year. They're like probably 1.1 million. You know, and plus we've been because of that chronic wasting disease, you know, that Alzheimer's at 30 kind of stuff.
Yeah, mad deer disease.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that transfers to the cow, you know. So anyway, they've been doing a lot of culling for that, you know, just basically hiring up some old guys with, you know, crazy rifles and just sit up on a ridge and just take all of them in an area. So anyway, yeah, they've been doing that. But anyway, we still, during hunting season, we hit 50,000 deer a year on the roads here in Wisconsin. That's a lot of cars.
And it drives your insurance companies nuts. I'm no fan of insurance companies, but where things like that are concerned, I actually have a little bit of sympathy for them.
Yeah, all meaning
because you, it, because they insure against it, but they have no way to insure against it, if you know what I mean. Well, I mean, I've got a dent in the side of the big red pickup truck right now where a deer decided to commit suicide. It didn't jump out in front of me. It literally ran headlong into the side of my truck.
Yeah.
And exploded all the way down the side of it. And trust me, that don't look pretty, nor does it smell much yummy.
I've been behind the semi where one of them decided to do that. It still haunts me.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, if the speed's right, it's like hitting a big meat balloon.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyhow, yeah. So, but, you know.
It's the dinner hour on the West Coast, and I'm doing it again.
Amen. But, you know, I actually have an idea for that, Bob. This is my own little pet idea. Would you like to hear it?
Go ahead.
All right. You know how I'm a big hemp advocate.
Yeah.
We should be growing it for fuel and for the 50,000 other uses that we need it for, right? Now, if we do that, right, as a nation and as a world, because it is probably in terms of crops to grow, it's probably the best choice. Because we can feed and get fuel, all this stuff, right? So if we do that, we're going to have a lot. And I buy a lot, I mean a lot, of fiber, right, that we can make, you know, like rope nets out of. And that's just one of those things that I look at, and I'm like, man, you can make a 12-foot-high, you know, hemp fence, you know, especially on the highways and so on and so forth, that would keep deer out. It would give people jobs to, you know, take care of it. And we could actually grow hemp crops on the roads and do, you know, like all that wasted space. And it would just, I mean, it wouldn't prevent cars from doing anything like that, but it would certainly prevent deer from running out and causing accidents and so forth. So that's just one of my little ideas and how I can actually see, I don't know, killing two birds with one stone. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, in, that's just my own rule.
not a bad idea. But it. So you know, and it's worth in West Virginia. I think at the turn of the 19th into the 20th century, around 1900, I think the deer population was almost zero.
I bet
the whitetail had been hunted almost to extinction, and it was only through a concerted conservation effort that they have come back, and they've come back with a vengeance. And so I can't plant a garden. The last garden I planted, I put in 124 tomato plants and 96 hot peppers and corn and beans and everything. Within 4 weeks of the plants going in or sprouting or whatever, I had nothing.
That's a lot of work.
Because the deer ate it all. And they don't eat it because they're hungry. They ate it because they are browsers. They'll taste anything. They'll eat multiflora rose. They'll eat blackberry brambles.
Marigolds.
Until it hurts. And then they don't do it anymore. And yeah, you're right. 12-foot fence? Absolute.
12-foot fence and marigolds in your garden. If you plant marigolds in your garden, they don't like that. And neither do bugs. So it's kind of a win-win. Yeah. Anyhow. But no, out in Idaho, for example, and this is why I happen to believe in, you know, natural systems. It's just my thing. You know, like you need predators in an ecosystem. Or you'll have too much, or, you know, and you'll cause problems. Like, if you ever see the mice explosions in Australia, you know, it's because they don't have enough
rabbits
on the farm because they kill them all, you know. So this is what they did out in Idaho, and this is the mentality of these people, and this is who we're battling against. They put the wolves back into Idaho, okay. I think they maybe, now there's about 1,000 of them, and now they're saying there's too many. And, you know, the noble wolf, the wolf that we hunted to extinction in this country, for just the sport of it, you know, the people that, you know, shoot them and leave them. Just for that, you know, they want to go out there now and hunt them again because they're going to take children. Even though there's never been a recorded, you know, attack or fatality on anything like that, they just start making up excuses of why they need to kill more. So this is a big battle that it's a real tough one to even.
We got coyotes imported into West Virginia because of the deer population and the turkey population.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's an open season on coyotes.
Yep.
Plus, coyotes are able to breed with stray dogs.
Mm.
So, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. You manipulate nature. Nature manipulates back. Hawaii is the great example. You know.
Oh, yeah.
No rats, so they get rats. So then you get snakes to go after the rats. Then you have to get the mongoose to go after the snakes. And then you see.
Yep. Yeah.
But that law of unintended consequences is the same thing that's at work with this stupid Supreme Court decision. You know, I guess you could say that the Supreme Court decision makes perfectly good sense in rural Wisconsin or rural West Virginia. Except for the fact that I don't think there's much need for fully automatic weapons, but, you know, who the hell am I?
Sure.
But it doesn't make any sense in any inner city in the United States, because it was a handgun ban, okay? So to that extent, it doesn't even make sense in rural West Virginia or rural Wisconsin. It was a handgun ban. Very few people, I admit some do, but very few people hunt with a stinking 357 Magnum. Some do. I knew a guy once. We were talking. Said, "Yeah, next week I'm going out to, lo and behold, Idaho. I'm gonna go mountain lion hunting with my 357 Magnum."
Yikes!
I wouldn't go into the woods in Idaho with anything short of a bazooka.
Yeah, that's so
or crazy. My buddy's grenade launcher, for the love of God.
Well, see, yeah, my father-in-law over here, he does a black powder 55 caliber handgun. But it's a black, you know, and I'm not a big handgun player. As I said, you know, always bring a shotgun to a handgun fight. So, you know, it's, you know, and I understand, like, I don't know, like back in the day, that these Wild West days that everybody wants to live in, didn't a lot of towns say, like, you know, no firearms in city limits and stuff like that? So I don't understand why it's like a big outrage that, you know, somebody, I mean, I grew up in New York, right? And I'm not trying to say, you know, I understand their argument of, you know, oh, handguns, you know, trying to, you know, say they don't happen. Well, it doesn't, you know, stop it. Because as you see in D.C. and you see, you know, with New York and all that other stuff, you know, that just happens. And, you know, it happens with these guys, and they go in there and they sell the firearms that they get in other places. And, you know how it is. And then they steal them. So it's, yeah.
But see, D.C. didn't have a ban on long, what is so-called long guns. You could have a 30-06 in your home in D.C. You could have a shotgun.
Yep.
You could have a 270, a Weatherby 300 mag, you know, whatever. There was no ban. And, but, you know, the opinion departs from common sense because there's nobody wandering around the streets of D.C. with 30-06s, except for the SWAT teams.
True.
And they're using M16s, but never mind. They're a different they're a different problem altogether. So the problem was obviously the handguns.
Yeah.
And it's the handguns in the wrong in the hands of the wrong people. But the way the handguns get into the hands of the wrong people is because the laws letting the handguns into the hands of the right people are so confounded lax. You know, poor little Michael Bloomberg. Yeah, poor little Michael Bloomberg. My left hind foot. He was reduced in responding to the Supreme Court decision today by saying, 80 people a day die at the hands of guns. We have got to stop that. The court clearly ruled that reasonable regulations are permitted under that decision. Talk about looking for the silver lining, Albert.
Yeah.
Reasonable regulations. Well, it was reasonable to say no handguns in D.C. I mean, Jesus, we live in a country where if I said something arguably, questionably threatening about the President of the United States, I'd get a visit from a humorless guy in a dark suit with a skinny tie and a thing coming out of his ear.
Yep.
Okay? This is the seat of the President. If you're concerned about presidential safety or Supreme Court justice safety or congressional safety, you feel better if there aren't any handguns in D.C.
Yeah, I wonder what was going on. I wonder if Bush had that going through his mind real quick when he was trying to wave at those guys that totally ignored him.
Oh, that was just pitiful. That was just pitiful. He gets off helicopter one in North Carolina, and there's two guys with their back turned, and he's waving at them. Hey! Hey! Don't look, don't look, don't look, don't look. If you don't look, he'll...
He drove back by my house, and I put on my Navy stuff, and I went outside, and this was in 2004, and as he drove by, I turned my back on him and put my head down. So I think he's getting used to it by now.
The White House praised the ruling.
I bet, yeah. Well, yeah, because it's gonna get their morons out there to vote. You know, it's gonna be like, we can't let these liberals get the Supreme Court ruling. You know, that's what it is. You know, we're so close to getting rid of abortion, and we got our guns, and now we need to get the final two. We'll have everything that we ever wanted.
I'm so close. Yeah. I am so close, Howard, to just saying, fling the barn doors open. I mean, challenge every regulation to every gun in America and just let her rip. Because eventually, you know, it's kind of like, you know, that after Tim Russert kicked the bucket, that there were a lot of pudgy, red-faced members of the for-profit media who ran off to their cardiologist. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the same thing will happen if they just fling the barn doors open. Eventually, somebody will get blown away that'll make people look up and go, you know, that D.C. handgun ban wasn't such a bad idea.
You see, well, this is, you know, and that's why, you know, we got to go the other route on that. We just got to stop. You know how I love to quote Frank Herbert and stuff, but you almost got to almost invent body shields so projectile weapons are irrelevant. You know, just like, I know that's
not. Nah, but that's the better mousetrap route, Albert, and you know it.
I know. But, you know, but at the same time, then, you know, then what do we got? Well, look at what we got. You know, we got to deal with all this. You know, D.C. don't need any more guns. Isn't it like the murder capital?
Actually, no, that's St. Louis.
St. Louis now?
Yeah. I think, yeah. St. Louis. No, it doesn't need any more guns. But you know what? There's going to be a bunch more now.
Oh, yeah.
And now the next step will be the NRA demanding concealed carry permits. in D.C.
They keep trying that here.
And you know, you can just see the family. I got you, Mom. Got you, Dad. Okay, clear, brother. Go! And everybody's got a gun. It's that great line from The Lion in Winter where the Catherine Hepburn as Eleanor of Aquitaine says, "It's the 11th century. We're all barbarians. We all have knives."
That's such a great movie.
It's the 21st century. It's America. We're all barbarians. We all have guns.
Yep. Well, I often look at these tribes of, you know, these long-lost tribes, and I look at, you know, how we perceive ourselves to be so much superior than they are. Look at the Mayans, and look at what they did with mathematics. They came up with the concept of zero.
Oh, I saw a story the other day. It turns out that it may be that much of what we've thought about Mayan history is wrong in terms of its age, because stuff has been discovered now that goes back an extra 1,000 years. We're getting to a point where we're approaching a point where that culture may be as old as the Egyptians.
Oh yeah, and that wouldn't surprise me in the least. And I sit here and I look at this, and I see these people who were able to lay out, to know that the Earth revolved around the sun. They were able to map out eclipses of the moon that, to our clocks to this day, are 33 seconds off. Okay, this is without computers and Big Blue and all this other stuff that we civilized.
No, this is a guy standing on top of a pyramid. Or guys, people, never mind. People standing on tops of pyramids for generations to map this stuff out.
And, well, you even look at that, you know, but this is why I laugh. I laugh at the arrogance. And I hate to say it, but, you know, I am one, but I hate it. It's white people. It's the white people, and I know there's a little bit. Yeah, I am blaming them. Look at what we do. We go into these places. We tell them this is not what day it is. This is not what year it is. Your year and date is now.
And by the way, you're evil because you're not wearing clothes.
Exactly. Or you wear beads, or you show your breasts, or anything like
right.
that.
Right. We need to civilize you with the lingerie industry.
Exactly. And we
repeat after me, underwire. You know.
And we sit here subjugating people and then proclaiming ourselves the victory. I mean, we're the victors. We're the ones that rule, and we're the ones that, and this is why, you know, this is not a sustainable way to go. And it's just, you know, it's the arrogance, the utter arrogance of white people to sit there and go into other nations and other places and pay, you know, these people. And look at what we do, man. We privatize other countries' water, so they can't even collect rainwater that comes out of the sky because it's owned. We pay these farmers in Africa nothing. 4 cents for 2 kilos of coffee that we pay $8 for a cup of. Okay, we sit here and basically undercut and use what our advantage is instead of lifting everybody else. We sit there and subjugate them, and then we wonder why they're in the positions that they're in. You know, man, you look at D.C. You know, now is this a race thing? Is this a race thing that D.C. is 98% black? No, that's what happened after the Civil War, right? Lincoln freed the slaves. They all went there to...
Well, see, that's the really beautiful thing here, because there's this quote out of the decision where Fat Tony says, "It was plainly the understanding in the post-Civil War Congress that the Second Amendment protected an individual right to use arms for self-defense." Emphasis, post-Civil War Congress.
Yeah.
Now, reckon why the post-Civil War Congress would clearly understand something like that. In light of the fact that Abraham Lincoln said shortly before his assassination that we cannot allow the Negroes to have firearms or else we will have a race war on our hands in America. I didn't say that. Abraham Lincoln said that.
Yes, he did. And this is, you don't have to go, you don't have to go much beyond the Iran-Contra affair to see how we meddle in those neighborhoods. And, where did L.A. get all those AK-47s and all that other stuff? Where did that stuff come into?
But see, whenever these goons write an opinion that they know is clearly wrong, but it's results-based opinion writing, They always try to throw caveats on it, that like they did with Bush v. Gore. Don't ever cite this case ever again. This is a limited case. It has no application. It's not part of the jurisprudence. It shouldn't be used for stare decisis. This case is just this case, and it stands alone. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, so today we get in the Heller decision, although we do not undertake an exhaustive historical analysis today of the full scope of the Second Amendment, nothing in our opinion should be taken to cast doubt on long-standing prohibitions on the possession of firearms by felons and the mentally ill, or laws forbidding the carrying of firearms in sensitive places such as schools and government buildings, or laws imposing conditions and qualifications on the commercial sale of arms. So what they said is, we've got a balance scrape to the gun industry and the loony fringe of the right that this will help get out to the polls, like you observed. But at the same token, we want to make sure that we make you understand that only certain people can be trusted with guns.
Mm-hmm.
Fill in the blank.
Mm-hmm. They love their chaos, don't they?
Oh, they love their chaos, they love their racism, they love their bigotry, they love their prejudice. You know, Fat Tony just made it easier for some mafia lieutenant to have a fully automatic machine gun instead of the semi-automatic gun that he uses for his usual whacking. It's going to make life a little easier. Just
those guys, gangsters, got to stick together. You know, the president, you know, has been behaving like a gangster with assassinations and roundups and grabbing, kidnapping people and putting them into dark holes that nobody will ever hear from him again. You know, when you sit there and you think about, you know, I know they're talking about the death penalty, and Mark Levine was talking about that, and Osama bin Laden and stuff like that, but you know what? Osama bin Laden needs a trial if everybody is going to catch him. He needs a trial, period.
I want him tried. I want him tried. And I want to sit and look at him during a trial the way the world got to sit and look at Hermann Göring and von Ribbentrop and, you know, the rest of the sickening crowd. They need to be zoo creatures for a while.
Yeah, they do. That's why I'm also against the death penalty. I just have, you know, whatever. Lock them away. Let them sit for the rest of their life in a cage. You know, as our not torture torture has already proven, sensory deprivation is living hell.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So, I mean, and if tell you, you know, the only way I'd want someone dead that ever raped my child or killed my child would be by my own hands. And you know, apart from that, I think I'd have a sweet satisfaction knowing that that whomever it is in lockdown. You know, barely able to tell what, you know, color the walls are anymore. You know, that I wouldn't mind. But, you know, to sit there and, you know, Bush, all these guys, and you know what they're setting it up for. Their little escape to Paraguay. And
yeah, I know. You know. I know.
What did Don, you say today?
Oh, see, I got that for later. Yeah. Yeah, it all kind of ties in, doesn't it?
Doesn't it? Yeah, it always does, doesn't it?
Yeah, sometimes I think this program's turning into the radio equivalent of A Beautiful Mind. Yeah, see, I found it in Reader's Reader's Digest. It's so obvious. Oh, Jesus.
Well, you know, when the line fits, the line fits. You know, these guys are trying to drag us down every which way that they possibly can. And it is certainly, without a doubt, desperation. You know, you know Tony Scalia doesn't want to be in the... You know what he wants. The guy's he's a little fascist. He wants, you know, two more little Thomases instead of, you know, having to deal with people. And I don't know if Barack Obama's going to put whom he would put in, but I would hope in order to counter, I think he would at least see how to the right Tony is, or at least maybe counter to somebody to the left as far. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, at least to sit there and do that. And Alito, no. How long is this guy going to live? Because these guys... Well, you know what they say, Bob. Only the good die young.
Yeah, I know. And see, even as liberals, we don't. It's not necessarily clear I'm hearing here from our pal Cindy in Washington. My husband and I and my liberal son all agree with today's decision. We lived in Los Angeles just south of Watts, and our neighborhood was a Mexican neighborhood wedged between the Crips and the Bloods and the watching gangs of Los Angeles. This is serious crime territory. We were armed to protect ourselves, even though to do so was unlawful. But without the hardware, you don't survive that neighborhood. When we were moving out, we had a moving van in front of the house, so the criminals gathered at each end of the block to make a run at our truck. I had to sit in a chair in the front yard with a loaded pistol to fend them off. They saw I was serious, and they backed off. We had to leave half our furniture to make them happy so they wouldn't follow us and shoot at us. Serious crime.
Yeah.
She says, now that we live in the country, we're armed here, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly am a liberal, Bob. I certainly am, and I tend to take I tend to want to be able to own firearms, and I tend to want to have that for the absolute worst-case scenario. I mean, I think that's why I think it's kind of a losing issue, and I think it'd be better to just attack the reasons and look, what are these people using all these guns for? What? Why?
Most of them aren't using them for, you know, most law-abiding citizens aren't using them for anything. I mean, you know, your true die-hard gun nuts get them out every once in a while and masturbate with them, but, you know, you know, different strokes.
I mean, I'm just talking about, like, we're really discussing the illegal ownership. Now, people that aren't, you know, going and getting licenses and making sure that what they got is, you know.
I recognize that we have to deal with our gun problem in this country. We made a deal with the devil, and we made it a long, long time ago. And you know, I'm just enough of a realist to recognize that, you know, because there are noisy NRA people out there, and you know, Hopi's roasting in hell, Charlton Heston, you can have my guns when you pry them from my cold dead fingers. That because of that, we're going to just make sure that more mothers weep, and more fathers tear at their hair, and more children go into the ground. That's okay, you know, but that's just America. God bless it. That's the deal we've made.
Well, yeah.
And we're not going to disarm. So that being the case, everybody gets one. You know, I'm real bitter about this. Everybody get a gun. But you know what? When somebody knocks down your door at 1 o'clock in the morning without knocking, and you fire off a few rounds because I'm free and I got me a Second Amendment right, and I'm going to defend my home to the death, and the cops come through and blow your ass away. I don't mean yours. I don't want to hear any bitching.
Yeah, well, yeah, you do hear those things.
What happened? It happened in Atlanta, Georgia. A 92-year-old woman, no knock. The cops are at the wrong door. And they bust through the door, and she fires off a couple of rounds. God bless her.
Yeah.
And they stitched her.
Actually, that just happened in Canada, and the guy actually was acquitted.
Well, the cops will walk on this one too. Obviously, she was unnecessarily firing on authority. If she had merely gotten on the ground, bless her heart, you know, Cindy says, I don't want a police state. Too bad. You've already got one.
Yeah.
And guess what? You don't have a right of self-defense against the cops. And the cops are a hell of a lot more dangerous in this country these days than any gang.
It gives them, what is that?
Because, like organized crime, most gangs are dealing within the purview of their turf or their operations. You know, mafiosis kill other mafiosis. On the other hand, the cops in Atlanta shoot 92-year-old women. Or maybe the video of the cop in Atlanta, Peter Godbold talked to us the other night, the cop in Memphis beating the daylights out of a transsexual person charged with prostitution who's wearing handcuffs. And he came over and beat her because she would not get up when he said, get over here, faggot. And she said, that is not the name my mama gave me. And he came over and beat the piss out of her for it.
Yeah.
You know, or the audio I ran the other night of the cop mashing the kid's face into the wall. You do not, and people need to understand this, you do not have any legal constitutional right whatsoever in this country to defend yourself against a rogue law enforcement officer, or not even a rogue, Albert, just one in the normal exercise of his or her duties, because defending yourself is called resisting, and it will get you maimed or it will get you dead.
Or tasered, which could wind up getting you killed, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, what to do, Bob, what to do?
I don't know. I simply do not know. Albert, I got to run on.
I'm going to go invent the body shield to try to fix this.
Yeah, go invent that, would you? I want the prototype.
All right, bud.
All right, see you, man.
Talk with you later. Bye.
Later. Oh, you gave up. Doggone it. No, I understand, and coming from rural places, I understand completely the firearms issue. I've lived in places, as I've said before, I've lived in places where, you know, the police response time was 20 to 30 minutes at best. But I also recognize, and this is just a philosophical thing, the cops don't prevent crime. The cops clean up after crime. They also issue traffic tickets. Now, you might have some preventative measures. I remember when the Clinton administration wanted to put more police on the beat, you know, actual beat cops hoofing it and walking around the communities. That has an effect. But, you know, guys sitting in the precinct or a roller sitting on the side of the interstate, there's no crime prevention going on there, unless you're willing to look at speeding as a dangerous crime. It's not I don't want a police state. With all due respect, you've got one. And, of course, there's a side of me that says that's the reason everybody should have a gun. And that's where we're headed. Go get one. But understand that because of things like signing statements and executive orders and little-known passages in the Patriot Act that most members of Congress never even bothered to read, there are clauses that allow those guns to be rounded up. And while it may be great at the Republican National Convention for some NRA flack to stand up and say, you can have my guns when you pry them from your cold dead fingers, when the time comes and some Bush or some proto-Bush or some later Bush says, round up the guns, the people doing the rounding up will be more than damned happy to pry them from your cold dead fingers. Do you understand? Sorry, that sounds a little supercilious. Yes, you understand. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, David, what's up?
Well, I hate to disagree with you, Bob, but me and my dad, we agree with the ruling. My friend agrees with the ruling, and I'll tell you why. The minute you say you can't have this, you automatically lose on default. Automatically, without question, you lose. It's over, game over, game time, because you're just pushing someone. I call it kind of thought bullying in a way.
Well, No. This is just a nasty ruling because of what it is and who did it. You know, for a guy who said, you know, oh, Americans are going to get killed, you know, if we don't torture people at Guantanamo, for somebody who just said that to turn around, that there right now as we speak, David, right now as we speak, because of this ruling, there is a mother in the District of Columbia who will bury her innocent child because of this ruling.
And there's another person who feels safe. See, Bob, the problem is if you really wanted this to go to the public, people would literally get their ass handed to them if this was ever a public vote. They really would, because I think a lot of people are just clueless when it comes to this.
So what you're actually saying, David, is that the Supreme Court did what Fat Tony Scalia always says he hates doing, and that is they legislated from the bench.
Bob, I hate to tell you this, but the law is a lie. It always has been, and it always will. We can always say something, well, you need to follow this law and this rule and this law. Well, you know what? The truth is, it's going to change. Laws are made to be broken. That's just how it is. And unfortunately, when it comes to guns, guns exist. And if someone wants one, see, Bob, this is the problem. The minute you say there's a mother dying, there's a mother crying, or there's someone, you can do that with anything. You can do that with cars. You can do that with cigarettes. My point is, you're probably right, but at the same time, the minute you say you can't have that, you've lost, my friend. You've lost.
Like I said, I'm a rationalist about all this.
I know, Bob.
I recognize this. But this is the opening of a door. So, you know, you're going to be okay with the next ruling that says everybody can have a fully automatic machine gun?
The truth is, we're all savages. If that's what the people want, that's what they get. That's how it works.
Regardless of the consequences.
Like I told you before, Bob, if people are scared and you've driven up the fear that much and the people respond in that way, and no matter if it's ignorant or anything, they've decided. They've made their decision. Let me just be clear. I don't own a gun. I don't plan on owning a gun. But when someone says I can't have something and they keep pushing in my face why I can't have it, literally, I'll tear you down. And that's literally what they did today. We pushed it in their face. But see, this is my problem, Bob. It really is thought bullying in a way. When you put something out and you tell someone that you're, it's almost like a morally superior test. Like, I'm more sanctimonious than you because I'm on a pedestal because I think this way, and that's where the road we're leading. And I'm sorry,
but David, please understand the DC statute in question didn't say nobody can have a gun. It said you can't have handguns because handguns have only one purpose, and that is the killing of other human beings.
Bob, if people feel safe and they want a handgun, look, let me put it this way. You had it for 32 years, okay? You're right, you had that for 32 years. Guess what, Bob? The pendulum swings. And it goes to the other side. That's humanity. That's savagery for you. And we live in it. We can pretend. We can pretend all day long. But the minute you take off the business suit, the minute you take off the golf shirt, we're all barbarians. That's how it works. And that's why I'm with Cindy. And I believe what she's saying is the same thing. I'm not for it. When someone's handed me a gun and said, here, have a handgun. I couldn't do it. I wouldn't have it. I'd be like, no thanks. But as for everyone else, they've decided. And I sit there and I go, you dealt with the devil this time, so let's see what happens.
Right, and that's my only point. This is the deal we've made with the devil.
Right.
I mean, there are all kinds of people who say, I need a handgun for self-defense in my home. You know what I say to those people? You're a moron.
But at the same time,
because if you've got a handgun in your home for self-defense, there are odds that upon using it, you're going to wind up killing one of your own family. Now, if you tell me I've got a shotgun for home defense, I'm going to tell you that if you got to have a gun in your house for home defense, that's probably pretty intelligent. Okay? But most of them are, this is not the Wild West. Most of them are never going to be used. For the folks who feel like they need them, they are pacifiers for grown-ups, okay? That's what they are. Because you've just said it yourself, David, they feel safer because of it. And feeling is the same as believing, and neither of them is predicated on an intellectual process. It is instead an entirely emotional response.
But at the same token, you feel safer that the handguns are illegal. It's a two-way.
No, I don't feel safer because they're illegal. The actual statute was working, and it was definably working with empirical data.
To you, it was working.
No, not to me.
Listen, Bob, you need to stop thought bullying. I mean, come on.
I'm not thought bullying. I'm saying
yes,
I don't
are.
Live
it's
in.
The way you are. You
David, I don't live in D.C., okay? But the statistics were there.
violent handgun crime was going and had been going down.
Bob, for years, people pushed this on people who wanted handguns. I'm telling you, Bob, you reaped what you sowed on this one. Everyone did in America. You shouldn't have pushed it and put in people's face like, you can't have it. Because the minute you do that, you're going to lose. That's why I keep saying to people, all liberals, it's game over time. About 32 years, it's over. It's done. Get over it. That's how it is. That's how the pendulum of humanity swings, Bob. All laws are meant to be challenged. Every single one. No matter if it's liberal, conservative, you don't have the moral authority on something. It's decided when it's decided. Whoever's in charge. Yeah, he could be a lunatic, but that's just the way it goes. It's Vegas. Spin the wheel.
David, I understand everything that you're saying. Completely.
All right.
Thoroughly. However, the opinion as it was rendered today, for instance, with its, let me find the exact quote. I read it just a minute ago. Nothing in our opinion should be taken to cast doubt on longstanding prohibitions on the possession of firearms by felons and the mentally ill. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the kid that shattered the lives of 30 families at Virginia Tech went and exercised his Second Amendment right to purchase a handgun. And he was mentally ill. He was profoundly mentally ill, violently mentally ill. And that particular statement from this opinion is nothing but a slap in the face to those 30 families. Because the fact that they say nothing to impinge upon the mentally ill cannot bring those 30 families' loved ones back. Or the very much forgotten case out of Wisconsin that just came and went of the young cop from the small town who was jealous because he hadn't been invited to a movie party and he went and blew away the people inside the house because his ex-girlfriend was there. Now, he was a white boy, so it was promptly forgotten. But he had access to weapons. There's an interesting dovetail to this whole thing. Because the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms today raided a subsidiary of Blackwater. You know why they raided them? Illegal possession of automatic weapons. Namely, 17 Romanian AK-47s and 17 Bushmasters. Fully auto. Illegal. Guess what Blackwater's going to do? Blackwater's gonna, if there is any kind of a conviction, Blackwater will take it up and say, hey, look at the Heller decision. You said we've got a right to own guns. You didn't say which guns. These are guns. We've got a right to own them. Hard cases make bad law. And Fat Tony and Sammy the Eel and Slappy Thomas and that crowd just let not only the camel's nose, but the whole blessed hump under the tent.
Bob, all the choices are bad because we're a poisonous species. Eventually, laws are going to get overturned. You're going to have to get over
So we that. Just don't try. So we just
no,
quit. We give up on civilized society,
no,
David.
That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm telling you, eventually everyone has their time in the sun if they fight hard and long enough for it. And it'll probably only be a second. It'll probably only be a minute. But that's how the gun nuts are feeling today. The same way that you felt about rulings in your life that you were happy about, they're feeling about now. Yeah, it may be poisonous and it may be toxic, but this is their time now.
And for that, we'll pay in blood.
We always pay in blood, Bob. It's humanity. It's human nature. That's how it is. We all go sometime. We decide what time we go, but again, that's human nature. I can't stop them. You can't stop them. I think you'd be surprised if you did a whole vote across this country if you said, You're not allowed handguns. What do you think about that? I think you'd be surprised.
Oh, no. I wouldn't be surprised. A national referendum like that, probably the move to ban handguns would get maybe 20% of the vote. Maybe. No, we've lost on this issue, and there are Democrats out there, David, who say, you know, Democrats need to get away from the dadgum gun issue. And you know what? I'm willing to do that.
You're not willing to do that.
No, I am willing to do that.
Oh, okay, good.
I'm willing to do that, but with reservations.
I understand, Bob. I understand.
Because the next time some crazy little bastard blows away a school building or a college campus or a church or a business, oh, look, it happened yesterday, David. It happened in Henderson, Kentucky. A guy got in an argument with his supervisor at a plastics plant. His supervisor sent him home. He called his girlfriend and said, I'm going to blow the whole damn place away. And he got his guns, and he came back. The girlfriend didn't say a word, and he killed, what, 4, 7 people? Thank God we've got a Second Amendment right to arm bears.
Well,
it's a blood debt. It's a blood debt we pay. And I'm okay, you know, I recognize it, but I reserve the right to look and ask every victim of every handgun crime in this country, were you in favor of the Supreme Court's ruling about the D.C. handgun ban? If you were, shut up. Take it. Like it. Bury your kid and say not a word, because that was the deal you made.
All of the people... This decision right here, the people have to realize that that's just the way it went, and eventually it'll come around again. But now, as far as saying, I hate that, Bob. Bob, when you say we would save lives and we would save this and we would save that, it's ultimately up to the person in charge what he decides to do with a weapon or any kind of weapon. Now, you can argue that wouldn't happen, a school shooting would happen like that, because if you would make them illegal, maybe so. But at the end of the day...
Columbine would have been a lot harder to perpetrate with ball bats.
They would have done it with bombs, Bob. They would have come up with something else.
And it would have been harder. See, that's
they
the beauty... That's the,
it, though, Bob.
That's the beauty of handguns. They're easy. You can get them. You know, we can't even. We've got a Congress that is so terrified of the gun industry that we can't even make some half crazed asshole wait for a week to pick one up. No, he's got to be able to pick it up and go be crazy that day. Wow. You know, we've got Walmarts that sell guns in the back and Prozac in the front. That's how nuts we are. You know, if it's all just this, I love this back and forth. I love this discussion. But if it's all just this cynical view, David, then why have bans on crazy people having guns? Why have bans on people charged with domestic violence having guns? Why have bans on people who are felons having guns?
Well,
there's nothing about that. Yeah, I mean, go read the opinion. There's nothing in the language of the Second Amendment that says felons or crazy or wife beater. It says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the safety of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be abridged.
All they have to do is counter that with bomb.
Everybody gets a gun.
I'm afraid of the authority turning on me. And I know you said you argued with Cindy that we're in a police state. That may be, but if they think that and they believe that.
Well, unless you've got your own F-16, unless you've got your own tank, and unless you've got your own howitzer and your own fully automatic weapons, you can sit there and talk about how you'll be a patriot and fight off the rogue government, but the rogue government's going to blow your ass away, and that'll be cold comfort when they're stuffing you in the dirt. You're not going to hold off the government with a handgun. Do you know what the accuracy of a handgun is?
Bob, that's part of the problem with our species. It's ultimately destructive. Every single one of us are in some way. So I don't know what to say. I mean, that's the other thing I hate about it. It's hypocritical because we're all destructive in some way, and to not confront that, and just, again, it's so many, I hate to say this, but so many liberals and so many conservatives, they hold themselves on a pedestal like, I am more moral. I am more moral.
Are you under the impression that I'm saying that, David?
No, I'm not. But what I'm saying is most of the liberal gatekeepers are. That it's a bullying.
I'm a gun owner making this. I'm a gun owner making this argument, okay?
I know, but that's what I'm saying. Not you, but the people who are the gatekeepers. They've been pushing down so much on these people who have a different worldview. And after a while, they just got mad and said, you know what? I'm not taking this anymore. I'm doing some emails. I'm doing a petition. I'm voting for that guy.
Do you know who the guy was who brought this case? Heller? He was what was called a special police officer in D.C. Who was authorized to carry a weapon at the D.C. correctional facility. He petitioned for the right to have a handgun at home.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he had a perfect right to have rifles, shotguns, slingshots, baseball bats, whatever, in his home, but that wasn't good enough because he wanted to walk around in his house with his handgun because I guess it made him feel like his Johnson was bigger or something.
Well, I still think that people should have that right.
Fine. You know,
sorry, Bob.
No, don't apologize. No, apparently I'm in the wrong here because I'm getting a lot of people disagreeing with me.
I don't know what to tell you about all of this. I mean, here's the other way I look at it. When it pushes it the other way, what's next after that ban? And I know you say, and see, this is the argument that people make. They're not going to all take your guns away. That's not what I'm talking about. It's going to push the other way. That's why there needs to be some push on the other way, on the other side. And it may be really painful, and we may have this kind of really polarizing effect we have on the nation right now. But, Bob, I'm not willing to go on that other side of where they ban everything and regulate this and regulate that. I mean, there needs to be a certain point where you just say, you said I can't have what? I mean, after a while, Bob, that's what it comes down to. And if it's
I'm
not,
sorry, I'm absolutely blown away by the fact that we can have guns, and we've had that affirmed, but, you know, you can't have, let's see, you can't have a plant that grows in nature.
Oh, Bob, I'm with you.
What else can you not have? I can't, absent bowing and scraping, people with chronic pain conditions can't have the pain medication that they need to make their lives tolerable and manageable.
Yeah.
I can't go to the doctor when I'm sick. By God, we can have guns, because when the pain gets bad enough, by God, you can go blow your brains out and end your misery. Wait a minute, John Ashcroft took aim at that, too.
That's the master manipulation of sociopaths in our country.
So let's just admit that this decision is what it is, that the ultimate goal of these people is to arm us to the teeth and then feed our fears of each other, hopefully enhancing the growing prison industry in this country.
I agree with that.
And that we will manifest our fears of each other instead of the rightful and just fear of a rogue government.
I'm with you on that.
All right. Sounds good, David. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
Take care. Bye now. I just want to be rational about it. I think it's okay to ban, to say that people don't need submachine guns. And I think it's rational in a place like D.C. to say people don't need handguns. Because, you know, if you're going to cause trouble with a handgun, you can tuck it inside your waistband and you know, your coat covers it. And then, you know, you unleash hell and you destroy families. But if you got to walk down the street with a .30-06 or a side-by-side double-barrel shotgun, it's a little bit more difficult to do. And frankly, you know how I feel about cops, but oh well. Interesting though that the you know the police forces all over the country came out against lifting the D.C. gun ban, and it was a special police officer who caused all the problems. God is a God of irony. Hi, welcome to the program.
How's it going?
I'm getting along. How about you?
Same kind of thing. Couple of quick things.
Yeah.
How come with this whole debate on this D.C. gun ban, the position is always, I mean, I can understand banning the guns in D.C. That makes sense. I mean, politicians and all that jazz. But how come the default position for the anti-gun lobby is we want to ban the whole thing?
Well, I don't, Gene, I don't think I haven't heard that.
Well, yeah, when I heard David talking, that's what I thought I heard, is that basically he's taking the position that you have to completely ban all handguns, or, the, you know, that's what the anti-gun lobby wants, and it's like, wait a minute, I never heard that from the anti-gun lobby, and I just, the thing that really kills me is it seems like we get pigeonholed with these positions that, to begin with, we haven't really set up. It's like the NRA picks both sides of the argument. Which one argues, you know, there's them on the one side, and then we have to argue no guns at all. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I do.
And I just, it irks me. The other thing that irks me about this whole thing is, remember the telecom immunity thing that we were all going to be, that we were all worried about and all that? What happened to that? I mean, I've been looking on the news for that.
What happened to that? The Senate caved.
Yeah,
and they're going to cave again on the final vote. I mean, they just are. But ultimately, Gene, the problem with this, and maybe I didn't state it plainly enough.
Yeah.
Is that right wingers and these crypto fascists in the Republican Party are forever screaming, and God knows if they've done it once, they've done it a million times, about activist judges.
Yeah, I know, and now they're doing activist.
And this is judicial activism at its very sleaziest.
Oh, I know. I mean, I don't disagree with you at all. What kills me, though, is it seems like our side is like, you make our own position for us. And it's like, wait a second. Now, if you ask any sane liberal, I realize you got the letter from the lady in L.A., but if you ask any general person in L.A., okay, or about the D.C. gun ban, I think they might tend to, if they really sat down and thought about it and said, I mean, I'm not as familiar with the D.C. I mean, the other thing that they did was they did it with the trigger locks, am I not right?
Trigger lock, unconstitutional.
Yeah.
Handgun ban, unconstitutional.
And it's
the only thing that's constitutional to fat Tony Scalia and his crowd of thugs is a wide-open Dodge City America.
Yeah, and the whole thing of it is, it's like we're not given time to really sit down and pick this thing apart and really look at these things. This is what kills me. And we're so busy arguing with each other over these points that they both pick for us, or they pick for both sides, that we don't see, you know, their innate hypocrisy about, you know, legislating from the benches and all that stuff. We don't see that. We just ignore it. Except for you, of course. But, you know, they just.
Well, Gene, let me say something, okay? I just want to make something abundantly clear.
Okay.
I do have an emotional investment in this issue.
Okay.
Okay? Because it was 37 years ago today that a little boy that I turned into picked up the phone and a man said, son, can I talk to your mama or your daddy?
Mm-hmm.
And I passed the phone over to my mother. My father was at work 37 years ago today. And the nice man on the other end of the phone in Atlanta, Georgia, a man by the name, well, never mind.
Yeah.
Explained to my mother that my brother's brains were all over a pillowcase.
Yeah.
From a handgun kept in a home that he was visiting. So I realize I'm getting emails telling me that I'm making arguments that are just plain silly because I'm mad.
I wouldn't say, I don't.
But see, my family has already paid the blood debt, Gene.
Okay, I don't disagree with your position. What I'm
saying, I'm not yelling at you. I'm just making something clear.
Yeah. Okay. I just think that we have to end up arguing. We end up arguing the points they give us, and I get sick of that. Come on, we're supposed to be the educated bunch. Are you just going to fall into this pit of? I mean, seriously. Now, let me ask you something. If it had been a sane policy, and this is what I consider a sane handgun policy, where you could own a gun, but you couldn't keep it at home. You had to keep it in an armory, that kind of thing. I think that's a sane, reasonable thing, and I think that would keep a lot of people from getting.
Well, see, that's what the guy who brought the case had, Gene. He had the right to carry a handgun at his place of employ. And he had to check it at the end of the day. But he wanted to march around his house and play toy soldier inside the four walls of his home. Or else he was terrified that somebody was going to know who he was and come after him. You know, just like in Tombstone. I'm not being sarcastic with you. I'm talking about the mindset of these people who get off on their guns so much. But this guy checked his gun, and nobody was challenging his right to carry that gun in the course and scope of his duties.
But I just see this is what really kills me is like, I mean, I'm looking at this and like, look, this is the capital city of the nation, and somehow it's supposed to be okay to carry a loaded weapon, you know, not a handgun, it's like, I would think a politician would say, wait a minute. Or a Supreme Court justice, for that matter. I mean, it just seems to me that this is like, boy, you're kind of courting disaster here by letting this gun ban drop in the nation's capital. I mean, it's not like D.C. isn't technically a state. Maybe it should be. It probably should be. But I mean, it's like you can make this argument in the other states, maybe, that you can't have a handgun, but D.C. was always considered a little bit different. So that means you ban handguns to keep people from blowing you away. Well, you're the nation's capital. Things have to be a little bit unique.
Okay, I'm gonna say something, Gene, here.
Okay.
I'm gonna say something, and I'm probably gonna catch hell for it.
Okay.
I find another irony in this decision.
Okay.
This decision wasn't, none of this came to a head in 2001 or 2 or 3 or 4 or 5. This decision was rendered a few months before we may finally cross a barrier and have a brown-skinned man in the White House.
I thought about that too.
Because I've got an email here from our pal Kate.
Yeah.
And she says, this has racism written all over it. The case started in D.C., and the court's saying, time to arm the Negroes and let them kill each other. She says, this is such BS, it makes me sick to my stomach. And living in South Central L.A., fussing about how much crime there is, hey, they are all brown, black, tan. That's akin to me complaining about the Mexicans who wander through the desert across the road from me. Ooh, gotta have a gun. I'm scared. They're gonna hurt us, all us white folks. And she says, when can we ever learn to live in the common village? It's all about power and poverty, haves and have-nots, and this ain't gonna end.
No, it's not. But I get mad at that when I hear my own side talk about, it's like picking up somebody else's talking point and making it their own. And it's clearly not. They have to sit there and think through the issue, but that's just me. And that's all I wanted to say. So I'll let you be.
Okay. I'm not griping with you, Gene. I'm not. I'm really not. And I appreciate your point of view on this. And you know, it bugs me the same way it bugs you. You know, Democrats and liberals have to run away from this issue because it might make the people, it might make the gun lovers mad and drive them to the voting booth.
Yeah, well, then, yeah,
but you know, like I'm trying to save their lives.
Well, the Republican, the right wing is masters at defying their opponents first. I mean, I'll tell you, I guess, to be honest, the more I think about it, it's like, gosh, I'm beginning to wonder if I can, I've debated this a long time, it's a little off the topic, but it's like, is the kumbaya ideal that is the liberal ideal, is that a good thing? I'm kind of in my doubt, but that I'm working on it.
So I understand.
I'll catch you later.
All right, take care, Gene.
Sure.
Bye now. Query coming in, and I'm going to answer it. Condolences. My heart goes out to you and your family for the loss of your brother. If your brother were run over by a car, would you want to ban vehicles? No, of course not. But you know what? Cars have steering wheel locks on them now. You can't just get in one and hotwire it and make it go. Part and parcel, it would have been simple enough for Fat Tony to craft a ruling, because again, this is results-based jurisprudence. This is the end they wanted to reach, and whatever means was necessary, they were willing to engage. They didn't just strike down the handgun ban in D.C., they struck down the trigger lock, too. And you know what? A trigger lock would have saved my brother's life 37 years ago. It was a handgun kept in a home, not secured, and one of the kids knew where it was, and it was a bunch of teenagers being teenagers, and they got it out. And they, you know, they thought they were smart. It was a Ruger 22 semi-automatic pistol. And they popped the clip. They thought it was unloaded. And a pretty young thing who I've heard had a little bit of a crush on my brother. My brother was holding the handgun. And a pretty young thing who kind of had a crush on him came over and playfully took the gun, pointed it at the side of his head, and said, "Oh no, don't do it, I love you so," and pulled the trigger, and that was the end of my brother. Do I hold all gun owners responsible at all for that event? No. I hold the societal deal with the devil that we have made responsible for that event. And for Columbine. And for the shooting in Wisconsin. And for the hell and damnation and misery that is traversing the streets of Henderson, Kentucky, as we speak. And for the grief and anguish that will forever be marked at Virginia Tech, you're damned right. And as a gun owner, that means I hold myself responsible, too. Because somewhere in my non-rational lizard brain, I feel like I gotta have a gun. and I recognize that in so feeling, I am a hypocrite. Live in the country, yeah, sometimes you got to shoot a snake or something. Most of the time, unless it's something really, really nasty, you can generally pick them up with a driver and throw them in the bushes. But people like to kill snakes, and it's handy to have a snake-killing gun around. Sometimes you got to put down a wounded animal. But handguns? Handguns? Handguns do one thing. Handguns kill human beings. It's their only purpose. At all. So you know what? I'm going to move on to some other stories. Depending on what somebody... Let's wait and see if... Hold on. Oh, they quit. I will move on to some other stories. And I'll try to quit hurting the Democrats by talking common sense about firearms and about what the Supreme Court did today. Interesting, however, I'm sorry, I can't get away from this. Interesting, however, that these right-wing thugs think so much so very much of the Second Amendment and so very little, so tragically little of the Fourth or the First, as it doesn't apply to religion, or the Third or the Fifth or the Sixth, Seventh, Eighth, Ninth or Tenth. But guns made Mark great. Praise Jesus. Let's go to the phones. Hi, who have I got?
Good morning, Bob. This is Robert in Japan.
Hey, Robert, how are you?
Pretty good. You doing okay?
Yeah, tough issue, but, you know, we'll be all right.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I was reminded that here in Japan we have such strict gun control laws that we only have a few dozen people actually die from guns. And that's usually with the organized crime syndicates anyway.
Right.
So, but, now we had a stabbing death, if you remember, a few weeks ago over in Tokyo.
Yes.
And that was a situation where the guy went crazy and he was tired of life. And the strange thing was that he was only 25 years old. And so
that's a commentary on society, isn't it?
Well, he was a temp worker, Bob. So he had, you know, temporary jobs here, come in and they would end, and he had to get another one. So you can imagine that kind of stress. And then in Tokyo, where everything is so expensive, you know, rents can be $800, $900 for a small, small box. That's why I don't live there. And so I can imagine, you know, that with that kind of stress, if, you know, you're doing that for 7 years, you know, if you're out on the streets from 18 on, yeah, that you'll explode. And so if he had a gun, that would have been just an absolute massacre, because in Tokyo, you're surrounded by hundreds and hundreds of people, you know, and on any given day, on any given street block, street corner, so. But, the gun control laws do work because, like I said, we only have a few dozen people killed by guns each year, so. And it's a lot harder to kill people with a knife, so.
Or a ball bat.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
I mean, you know, we are dangerous apes. I mean, but please, I recognize that. And among the first tools that humankind ever developed were, things to hurt each other with.
Yeah.
I get that part of the argument. The question is, you know, I can't help remembering, can't help but recalling that when it was Alfred Nobel who invented TNT, right?
Right.
And he did so thinking that he had just created something that would end warfare forever because of its terrible, terrible force.
Right.
The same thing was said about the Gatling gun, by the way.
And the nuclear bomb, probably, too.
Well, at that one, Robert Oppenheimer looked up and quoted the Bhagavad Gita and said, "Lo, I am become death, the destroyer of worlds."
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Now, I mean, in Japan, it's become, I mean, homicide is a very unusual thing, but it does happen, and, but suicide is much more the way out, because it's less offensive to other people, so, we have, I think, one of the highest suicide rates, one person every 15 minutes. So it actually broke over 30,000 last year, so the government was kind of spinning in its wind, you know, what to do, but, a lot of it is just, you know, 16-hour work days where you come home exhausted and you got another 16 more hours the next day, and for the rest of your life, yeah, people give up, and they're, you know, it's like a hell. So, actually, you remember that crazy woman? This is kind of like a prayer meeting thing, but you know, that crazy fortune teller that, what was her name? That it was involved in, predicting, finding spirits. She was on Larry King a couple times. Makes $700 for every 20 minutes. She actually said that this place was hell. And it's basically, but I think it's a hell of our own choosing. Sylvia Brown, that was her name. So.
Yeah.
Of course, Larry King was too stupid to follow that up, though. I mean, well, okay, this is hell, then let's explore this, but no. But it's really a hell of our own choosing. So, and of our own stupidity and stuff like that, I think. But, now, I mean, we get, I keep looking at the states, and I keep shaking my head and shaking my head and shaking my head because it's like a repeating loop. I went over to, Wikipedia to look at, Huey Long's homepage, my namesake. And, quite interesting. Very, very interesting. I would definitely have your readers take a look at it because a lot of what he went through is exactly the same thing that's going on now. He tried to get free textbooks to, Louisiana's parishes there. And one right-wing conservative Catholic parish said, "No, we're not getting free textbooks. That's a charity." And so he decided to withhold funding for an Air Force base there. And then they caved in because they wanted that Air Force and the guns and the soldiers there, that parish. Then he put a 5-cent tax on barrel oil, and Standard Oil just went absolutely berserk. And they tried to impeach him, and that didn't work out too well. And incredible. I mean, if you just go through it and go, "Hey, yeah, that's the same thing going on today, and same thing," and it's just, like I said, an endless loop. Strangely enough, he has the same Chinese astrology sign as you did.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, rabbit?
I'm looking at this like, yeah. Little rabbit. I kept thinking, oh, this is a dragon or a rat or something, but nah. But,
yeah, well, the way he went through the corrupt Louisiana political underbrush, you would have almost expected him to be a boar, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you think, you know. He there was a good quote. He said, "I used to get things done by saying please, but now I just use dynamite and blow them out of my way." Great quote.
And sometimes, you know, there's still those out there that will tell you that there was a larger conspiracy involved with his assassination. But but there's no getting around the fact that he was far more radical, for instance, than any of the most liberal of the Democratic Party at large, and that
right.
His ideas were co-opted to prevent larger social welfare programs. They were co-opted and watered down to prevent larger social programs from being enacted en masse.
Exactly right. I mean, FDR was really the compromise candidate. I mean, the Republicans are light years ahead of us in terms of strategizing and, you know, compromising the situations. And yeah, I mean, life would have been a lot better if he had been actually elected and hadn't been assassinated. But,
I mean, the guy was out there writing songs. I mean, he wrote songs and published sheet music like every man a king.
Well, yeah. But no, yeah. He was an incredible man, and so that's, you know, very charismatic in some ways, and so a little bit too charismatic, so a lot of people just, you know, they, I mean, even back then you could see, well, we gotta compromise, and so, he didn't have too much of a big following there. I mean, he had like one third of the people following him, but, yeah, I look at the Congress today, even with Obama sometimes, you know, with NAFTA, and it's like, well, what's going on here? And it's almost like you get into a situation like a cattle trod where you're going down a path and you're forced to make compromises. And I just wonder how long this can go on. I mean, oil's going up to $150 a barrel?
Yeah, it passed 140 today.
140? Yeah, okay.
And the stock market, it didn't fall. It dove into the toilet. It cast off 358 points, the Dow did.
Yeah.
General Motors posted their lowest level since 1955.
Wow.
Yeah, and the financial houses are saying, listen, there's a lot more hell coming down the pike. The Standard & Poor's 500 lost 39% or 2.9% of its value.
Yeah.
NASDAQ was off 80 points, or 3.3% of its value.
Yeah.
The NASDAQ 100, 78 points down, 4.1% of its value.
Yeah.
This is not, you know. And
this is
I
not
mean,
good, yeah.
Yeah, this is a very ironic day, Robert.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this, you know, on the day that we get the stock market numbers like this, the Supreme Court says, "Hey, everybody, go get a gun. It's road warrior time."
Mm-hmm. I mean, when I was listening to your caller a couple days ago about, I think he was up in Georgia. He was thinking about moving down to Jacksonville.
Yeah, that was Vince.
I kept thinking, geez, you know, this all sounds like the 1980s, you know, because I remember. The only job I could get in Florida at that time was that outdoor treatment counselor, you know, and that was 93 hours a week. I mean, that's 4 days on. We're talking 24 hours a day type thing, and 3 days off. And people were, I mean, driving down from South Carolina to interview for these jobs. And, you know, I was making $990 a month. And there was just nothing else there unless you joined the Army. So,
well, you say the 1980s, Robert, because that's your point of reference.
Yeah.
But I've got a, well, I guess I'm just in a grim place tonight. But I've got a lot more. I see a lot more similarities with, I say Road Warrior and Mad Max. Mm. But there's equal similarities with the Grapes of Wrath.
Oh, sure. Yeah, of course. I mean, people are going to be chasing these jobs that don't exist, and they're just scrambling, and you know, I'm not thinking even my situation way over here is necessarily safe, because we're all interconnected. I mean, when the Depression hit back in the 1930s and the banks closed, 2 days later the banks closed in Japan. So
yeah,
and everybody went, oh, wow, what, we have no more money. So I mean, what happened to Argentina is not a few, 10 years ago, whatever, that great economic collapse they went through, is not just for brown people. You know, it can happen to white people. And the money that you think is in the bank, you think is your money, is actually, well, they think it's their money. So I think.
And guess what? In an argument with the bank?
Yeah.
Bank wins.
Bank wins, yeah.
I don't care how many I don't care how many handguns we have. Bank wins.
Yeah, bank wins. Yeah, I mean, they could only get $20 out per day, and so, and I've read, you know, even Soros, I think, had a homepage that said that, you know, there is a super collapse coming now, and we're not even there yet. So I'm still stocking up on food, Bob. No doubt about it. Trying to get about 7 years.
No, I was talking about this earlier today, and I guess there's a financial advisor out there who says he's getting out of stocks entirely and into cash and bonds, and said he expects to lose on that too. And I said, I think it's time for me to move my position into rice and beans.
Yeah, yeah.
In the 50-pound bag variety.
Exactly. I mean, you got to be looking at it. I mean, that was my position. I want to actually look at my future. I want to be able to touch it and taste it and have it right there, you know. And I dug up half my backyard and got the vacant lot behind me, and I'm throwing stuff down there. And
oh, yeah, under the worst of circumstances, if you've got anything close to potable water, you can build a fire even if you're burning dried dung, okay? So that means you can cook the rice and the beans.
Well, this November, I'm going to get a wood-burning stove. Yeah, which in Japan is kind of unusual, let me assure you. But I'm up on the mountain. I got my weekend house up there, and I just get the fallen branches and cut it up. Even those are, use those or because one way or the other, that damn war with Iran's going to happen. You know that. Especially if a Democrat gets elected, Bush will just sabotage it. And here's a little present for you. And once that happens, the kerosene, nice little kerosene that we get to heat our homes over here, that's going to end.
Sure.
Gas, LPG gas, that's going to end.
And I wonder if the so-called industrialized nations that rely on things like Iranian oil, do you think that they ever pick up the phone and call the White House and say, we're going to have a real problem with you if you do this?
You think. Yeah, you think, because, Japan has lots of, contracts with Iran.
But see, George Bush is so insane that I think that other nations fear him insofar as because they've dealt with him, and they know that if they confront him, he might just do it to spite him. I mean, I had the story in the stack last night, and I can maybe try to recover it, but there was a story that said the White House had refused to open emails from the EPA because they thought that the emails had information in them that they didn't want to read. I'm not kidding, Robert. I mean, any college kid who's ever run up a credit card debt knows that not opening the credit card bill is not it's not a financial recovery strategy.
No. Sometimes, if I didn't know how stupid this president was and this administration was, I would be saying, "Oh, you're making that up." But no,
I'm not. I'm really, really not.
I know.
I got my fingers in my ears. La 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 la. I'm not listening. I'm not listening.
Oh God.
Because they didn't want
to. How many more days of this filthy thing? The administration? Do we have left?
Oh, we've got the month. Too many.
Too many. Yeah.
We've talked about putting a goodbye to Bush counter up on the website or something. But until this is my cynical philosophy, Robert, until that thing ticks down to absolute zero, too many days.
Yeah, I'm not going to rest easy until I see Obama actually swearing his hand, actually taking controls of the government. Even then, we're infested. I mean, there's no other word for it. Infested with a bunch of Republicans that are going to work against him every step of the way. It's just like, Jesus. Democracy. I'm becoming less and less of a fan of democracy. It's working out real well in Africa, as you can see, with Zimbabwe, Kenya, Angola, and even here. You got the rich, the elites running the show at the end of the day. And I don't know, I'm cynical, but I keep keep on growing some more potatoes or something. I don't know. But I just wanted to say good morning to you.
Well, I appreciate it, and to you as well. I trust it's a nicely developing summer there in Kitakyushu?
Yeah, the rainy season just finished a couple days ago, so we have another sunny day. But not so bad.
Now, do you teach summer classes, or does university run
University started. Our first semester started in April. That's the first week of April. So with the cherry blossoms. So we're still in the middle of our first semester. So that won't end until about the first week of August. And then we'll take a summer break for August, September, start up again for the second semester in the first week of October. So, and we finish up in late February. So, and, on a different schedule.
Well, you said at one point that you were anticipating a trip home. Is that still in the
August. I'm going to be coming. That was quite an adventure because I had to get the kids' passports renewed because they were outdated. And I thought an American passport was a sign of American nationality for a child. Not. You had to bring in their birth certificates, but it's a consular certificate of a child born abroad. And all the papers I lost, I mean, that I could have lost. I thought I'm super, super organized. I couldn't find those damn papers. So we went back and forth, me and the consulate. And finally, I just brought in my Japanese registration, had that translated, and that was good enough.
So in other words, the American consul in Japan said, your papers are not in order.
Your papers are not in order, yeah. And you're not getting the kids' passports. So I managed to get through that one and, you know, seven pins and needles. Got into the consulate. And our cell phones, we call them K-ties here, we had to leave them behind because it could have been a bomb. Okay, take the K-ties. And then you can't take the bags in because you may have plastic explosives in the bags, you know. I mean, you know, vinyl bags, paper bags, whatever. Couldn't bring those in.
Well, that reminds me of when our kids started school over here. My sister sent these lovely little backpacks for them to go back and forth to school with. Well, they weren't allowed. You can only have transparent book bags.
Wow.
Because they want to be able to see the bomb or the gun or the knife.
Oh. Jesus. Oh, Lord.
We are scared. This is the coward nation, Robert. The COWERED nation.
Yep, sir. Yep, sir.
Well, a very good day to you.
Okay.
I hope your students understand what a great teacher they have.
Well, we try. I try to make sure they have at least a good laugh, you know, because I say, you know, this is paradise because after you get out of here, you know, that's where the reality comes in. And I tell them, look, there are options. You know, you can go to Europe now and get a visa as an engineer quite easily. 2-hour lunches, all of August off. Go home at 5 or 6 o'clock, whereas here they go home at 11 o'clock, maybe 12 o'clock, or 10 o'clock if they're lucky.
Well, this is gonna be so cliche, but I sat down and watched Lost in Translation again a couple of weeks ago, and I just
I just love
that film. I don't know how accurate a representation it is of life in Tokyo, but I love that film.
Well, Tokyo's a different world. It's like, you know, like comparing New York City to you know, Iowa or you know. Small town America. I mean, it's so different, you know. It's a hyper commercial, hyper. I don't have a whole lot of respect for it. I mean, it's just too crowded, too noisy for me, but too expensive too.
Oh, by the way, before I do let you go, because I know you do have to go to work, I have to ask though. John Fox brought this up on the Horn Section the other night. Did you see the story of George Bush's welcoming remarks to the president of the Philippines?
Geez, I was just looking at that link, but I didn't read it. No, what did he say?
The president of the Philippines came to visit, and she was going to sit down, and they were going to have a substantive discussion, among other things, about the capsizing of the ferry that killed 800 people.
Right.
But before they could get down to business, he had to tell her a charming anecdote about how he had such warm feelings for the Filipino people because every time he eats a good meal, he thinks of Filipinos because they got a cook that's a Filipino in the White House.
Oh, God.
The level of racism and bigotry is every time you think they've gone as low as they can go, there's another trap door, Robert. There's another trap door.
And to think of that, you know, the Filipinos are, I think, the second richest immigrant group. Maybe the third, I can't remember, in America. Because most of the Filipinos in America are nurses or doctors or psychiatrists. I mean, when I worked as a counselor, my psychiatrist I worked for was a Filipino.
Oh, and George also confirmed to the president of the Philippines that the cook there in the White House is a nice man.
Oh, God. Oh, shit. Yeah. No, there are a lot of smart Filipinos. My wife is one of them.
Does this stuff make it? I mean, why? You know, I would think that in maybe Manila, there'd be marches in the streets over bigotry on this level. And demands that the
president... Oh, they're too busy working, yeah. No time for that, yeah. And the thing is, you know, if you act stupid like this the entire time, then each time he opens his mouth, it's like, oh, okay. You know, no need to protest because, you know, that's just who he is, so...
Well, it goes hand in glove with the other thing. You know, let's not be mean to George. He might do something out of spite.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I've worked with crazy people in Tallahassee and, you know, in the psych center. I mean, you got to watch what you say and watch what you do because you just don't know what they're going to do the next second. So what can I say?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Robert, take care. Thanks. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye. It's our buddy Robert, the professor in Kitakyushu, Japan. So it's break time. I haven't taken one of those lately. Let's have a little musical interlude. You know my predilection for the drive-by truckers. Let's hear a little something. This from Decoration Day. This is America's Liberal Voice. America's listener-supported Liberal Voice. This is the horn.
Separation Day. Not a mind to roll a stone on his grave. What will he say? Keeping me down, boy, won't keep you away. It's Decoration Day. When I need a heel, boys, to put him away. Every fight till the last loss is last living day.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Rob.
Happiness is a warm gun would have just been way too easy. So Decoration Day instead. Ain't nobody like the truckers. 6 minutes past the hour, at least it is here. We'll have to factor in the inherent delay in the internet wherever you are. And, you know, maybe the gun thing's overblown. Arr. And if it is, you know, look. The decision didn't really change anything. Tempest in a teapot. My bad. Sorry I brought it up. Let's go to something that actually does have some substance to it. Mark Levine played this. I want to play it again, too. I generally try not to repeat what's already happened on shows earlier in the day. But in this case, I'll make an exception. Because as I noted in the at the beginning of the program, today was the John and Dave Morning U Crew in the House Judiciary Committee. What we have here is an excerpt first of John Conyers' fruitless attempt to get that filthy, filthy, disgusting, miserable excuse for a member of the human race, John U, to actually tell the truth. Here it is.
Is there anything, Ms. Professor Yu, that the president could not order to be done to a suspect if he believed it necessary for national defense?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that goes back to the quote you just read, because...
No, I'm just asking you the question. Maybe it does or doesn't, but what do you think?
I think it's the same question that I was asked.
Well, what's the answer?
First, can I make clear I'm not talking about...
And you don't have to make anything clear. Just answer the question, counsel.
I just want to make sure I'm not saying anything.
You don't have to worry about not saying... Just answer the question.
Okay. My thinking right now...
Yes, right now.
Okay. My thinking right now...
This moment.
Yes. This moment, Mr. Chairman, is that, first, the question you're posing...
What is the answer...
Mr. Chairman, I'm not trying to make you...
I get it. Okay.
Let me answer the question. I will answer the question.
No, you're wasting my time. Look, counsel, we've all practiced law. Hold it. Could the president order a suspect buried alive?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that I have ever...
I'm asking you that.
Given the advice that the president could bury somebody alive.
I didn't ask you if you ever gave him advice. I asked you, do you think the president could order a suspect buried alive?
Mr. Chairman, my view right now is that I don't think a president would, no American president would ever have to order that or feel it necessary to order that.
I think we understand the games that are being played.
Yeah, we do. I do too, Chairman Conyers. Because, see, when you've got a witness and he's testifying and you ask him a straight-up question, could the president order a suspect buried alive? And you get weasel word answers and waffly answers like, Mr. Chairman, I don't think I've ever given advice that the president... No, I didn't ask you if he'd given the advice. I asked you... if the president could order somebody to be buried alive. Well, Chairman, my view right now is that I don't think a president, no American, would ever have to order that or feel it necessary. Didn't ask you what you thought or what you felt. I asked you if, in your legal opinion, the president could order somebody to be buried alive. And we can stay here all day till you answer the question, Mr. You. But But instead, John Conyers said, I think we understand that games are being played. But see, when a witness answers a question with, I don't think a president, no American president, and weasels and dances around and tap dances and float and rope-a-dopes on a very simple question, do you think the president has the power to order someone buried alive? When they dance around it like that, and, you know, you can go to Think Progress. You can watch the video for yourself. You can watch the little smirk on John Yoo's face. And you can know this. Don't suspect it. Don't believe it. You can know this. That when John Yoo is dancing around that question, the real answer to the question is, you're damn right he can order somebody buried alive. And you know what? I want to dig the hole. I get off on that. That turns me on, Chairman! You don't want to know. When I wrote that memo, when I first came up with the idea that the president has the power to order electrodes to be attached to the genitals of the child of someone that we want information from. You know what, Chairman? When I came up with that, baby, I was naked. Because it turns me on. Torture is my thing. It's my bag, baby. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was pornographic. John Yoo gets off on torture. Unless it's, of course, him. And see, that's the next step. The next question you ask that dirty little filth bag is, Professor Yoo, let's say you're back here testifying in 8 months' time. And I'm sitting here asking you questions, and I get a memo from the new president telling me to waterboard your filthy ass. Does the president, 8 months from now, have the power to do that to you, you? Does he? Come on! You said the president... Okay, never mind. Let's stay within the parameters of what you have said, Professor Yoo. You got kids? Let's say 8 months from now, the president sends me a memo saying, get John Yoo's kids and put a set of jumper cables on their genitals. And put the other ends on a diehard battery. Make sure it doesn't cause organ failure or death. Professor Yoo, does the president have the power to do that to you, you? And would you get off on it as much with it being your own kids as you do when you're talking about it being some brown person's kids? How sick are you, Mr. Yoo? How twisted are you, Mr. Yoo? How perverted are you, Mr. Yoo? That would have at least been good theater. And this was okay theater, too. But you do understand that it's theater, right? You know, they say in the days of ancient Greece that the reason Greek tragedy and Greek comedy was so effective within that populace was the willingness of the audience to vicariously participate in what was going on stage. That in fact, and I guess it was Samuel Taylor Coleridge some couple of thousand years later, who identified that concept and termed it the willing suspension of disbelief. And by that he meant that it was a conscious, willful act on the part of the reader of the poem, the listener to the music, the viewer of the theater piece. That we were willing to suspend our disbelief insofar as we all know that when we go in the theater, it ain't real, and the blood is tomato juice or something like that, and the knives are rubber, and the gods on the cranes aren't gods, but actors with masks on. We all know that. We know it intellectually. But because we want to get something out of the process, we are willing to suspend that knowledge and enter into an organic relationship with the actors, with the musicians, with the poet, with the novelist, the author. And that analysis by Samuel Taylor Coleridge, and I think it was Coleridge, has really proven quite correct down the years. That's why people read Stephen King novels. That's why people watch Freddy vs. Jason or The Ring. That's why sitting in a movie theater during a screening of Saving Private Ryan with the really cool Dolby's 5.1 sound or whatever the heck it was, that had the scene at the landing at Normandy and the bullets zipping by you through all those THX effects and all of that cool DBX stuff, and you know, people ducked. Well, the same thing applies here. Because this was fascinating theater. And I've got another example of it. Because, like I said, it wasn't just John Yoo, it was the John and Dave Morning Yoo crew, because David Addington showed up too. And David Addington may actually be a bigger, more evil bastard than even John Yoo. And he played theater games too. This is an exchange between David Addington, who was, of course, the author of every bit as much or more of the vile, hateful, loathsome, anti-constitutional, anti-American filth that has flowed like an open sewer out of the Bush White House. And so these are the word games that he played. Sit back, because this is... it's either high drama or high comedy, and I haven't quite decided what yet.
And I think you, Mr. Addington, indicated that you had multiple conversations regarding enhanced interrogation techniques with the CIA.
With the Office of Legal Counsel, Office of General Counsel at CIA.
Did the issue of waterboarding arise during the course of those conversations?
I think you'll find that over the years, lawyers in the group talk at various times, there would be discussion of particular techniques.
Now, bear in mind, this guy's perjuring himself, okay? Because if you recall the story that I brought to the table last night, all these people say, "Oh, yeah, we never talked, and no, we didn't ask, we didn't do nothing about torture until the people on the front line started asking us, now, please, can we torture?" But it turns out that, in fact, they were actively soliciting ideas for torture as far back as July 2002. Yeah, okay, so just say it.
As I indicated to the chairman at the beginning of this, when the subject came up...
Was waterboarding one of...
That's what I'm answering, because I know where you're headed. As I indicated to the chairman at the beginning of this thing, I'm...
See, he knows where Congressman Delahunt's headed, because he's so much smarter than Congressman Delahunt. He can anticipate questions before the questions are even asked. Jesus, that's better than Superman X-ray vision, isn't it?
Not in a position to talk about particular techniques, whether they are or aren't used or could or couldn't be used, or their legal status.
In other words, Congressman Delahunt, kiss my butt. I'm not going to give you a straight answer. I'm so damn crooked that when I drop dead, they're going to have to screw me into the dirt. That's what that is.
And the reasons I would give for that, if you look at, I think it's Exhibit 9, the President's speech of September 6, 2006.
Wait, here it comes. This is precious. This is just precious.
explains why he doesn't talk about what particular techniques.
Oh, I can understand why he doesn't talk about it.
You've got to communicate with Al-Qaeda if you do. I can't talk to you. Al-Qaeda may watch C-SPAN.
Right. Well, I'm sure they are watching, and I'm glad they finally have a chance to see you, Mr. Addington.
Yeah, I'm sure you're pleased.
Yeah, I'm sure you're pleased. Because, you know, you're probably in league with Al-Qaeda, you damn liberal. Don't you understand we're at war?
Mr. Addington, nobody ever declared war. Certainly this Congress did, that the Congress didn't declare war. I can't talk to you. Al-Qaeda may watch C-SPAN. That's just, if only we were doing video, you'd see I'm making my Robert De Niro face, you know, with the mouth sort of turned down at the corners. That's just something. Can't talk to you. Al-Qaeda may watch C-SPAN. Okay, Mr. Addington, then we have no recourse left but to waterboard you. That'd be good theater, wouldn't it? Hey, guys, go get the jumper cables and the Die Hard. Mr. Addington doesn't want to talk to us. If it works at Gitmo, it's bound to work right here. You'd like to see that little bastard crack a sweat, wouldn't you? And I don't mean just the little tiny beads at the hairline. I mean the full-on flop sweat. And you know what? If you brought in the jumper cables and the Die Hard, he probably wouldn't, because he'd think, wow, they'll never do that. But then you roll in the gurney. And then you take him and you pin his arms behind his back, and then the beads come out on the hairline. And then you start ripping his clothing off. And then the flop sweats come. You're the one that, hey, Mr. Addington, you're the one that says torture's the only adequate way to get information. And you just told me you won't talk to me because Al-Qaeda may watch C-SPAN. Well, Al-Qaeda's going to watch this too, Buster. Yeah, boy. But again, it's all theater. What do I mean by that? Oh, I don't just say things. Why are we having these hearings? What is the purpose of these hearings? Really, beyond giving people like you and people like me a little bit of vicarious satisfaction at watching these dishonest, miserable, soulless, murderous, psychopathic bastards, watching them have to dance a little bit, what does it do? What good is it? What is the end game? Where does this wind up? You know the answer, and I know the answer. If we had a Congress and a Democratic majority in the Congress that was actually dedicated to fulfilling its obligations to the Constitution and the people of the United States, these hearings would be in support of, come on, everybody, say it, three syllables, impeachment. That's what these hearings would be for.
But Nancy Pelosi has said that impeachment is off the table.
Yeah, sure. You betcha. Thanks, Nance. So glad we busted our ass in 2006 to make you speaker. Thanks, Steny Hoyer. Thanks, all you 100 Democrats who voted to stick a knife in the Fourth Amendment. Wonder how many of you have sent press releases home today talking about the heroic decision of the Supreme Court in protecting our right to keep and arm bears, but couldn't be bothered to vote for the Fourth Amendment because you're too busy worshiping at the shrine of the Second. They all matter. And impeachment matters. But until such time that impeachment is no longer off the table, hearings like this are nothing. Nothing, I tell you, nothing. But a piece of theater in which people like you and me, who are actively engaged in and actively engaged by the concept of rule of law and equal justice under law, for us, it's theater. For us to sit here and believe that these hearings go somewhere, that they have some sort of point, we have to do what Coleridge said. We have to engage in the willing suspension of disbelief. Because impeachment isn't happening, is it? Is this in support? If this hearing, and maybe I just need a little more background. If this hearing was in support of Dennis Kucinich's articles of impeachment, then I take everything back, and it's not merely a piece of theater. Otherwise, it is. Impeachment? The McCain-Turian candidate was at Xavier University in or around Cincinnati today. And somebody actually got a question through to him. The person asked John, Torture Boy John, John McSame, John McBush, asked him, this is the quote, "I appreciate this opportunity, Mr. McCain, to ask you a question. Part one is regards to the articles of impeachment brought up by Kucinich for Bush. What your stance is on that regards to manipulated intelligence to form the policy?" And McCain cut him off. "First of all, I do not agree with, quote, articles of impeachment, and I can assure the majorities of both parties in both houses would not agree either." Sherman, set the Wayback Machine for 1999. Senate of the United States of America. This would be at the time that the impeachment of Bill Clinton was in the Senate of the United States. And John McHypocrite stood up and said, "Presidents are not ordinary citizens. They are extraordinary in that they are vested with so much more authority and power than the rest of us. We have a right, indeed we have an obligation, to hold them strictly accountable to the rule of law. It is self-evident to us all, I hope, that we cannot overlook, dismiss, or diminish the obstruction of justice by the very person we charge with taking care that the laws are faithfully executed. It is self-evident to me." Yeah. It is self-evident to me. Well, it's 2008, John. And it's self-evident to the rest of us that starting a war based on a tissue of lies and persisting in an occupation still based on that tissue of lies is every bit as impeachable as a consensual sex act, John. It is obvious to us, the normal people, John, that in your words we cannot overlook, dismiss, or diminish the obstruction of justice by George W. Bush in withholding from justice itself the overt criminal acts of his vice president and Scooter Commuter Libby, and David Addington, and John Yoo, and Don Rumsfeld, and Condi Rice, Wolfowitz, and all the other filthy killers. We can't overlook Bush's obstruction of justice. By the very person we charge with taking care that the laws are faithfully executed. Hypocrite, hypocrite, thy name is Repiglickin. Mighty hard to stomach sometimes, isn't it? What? Do they not realize what hypocrites they are? Do they think that we're so stupid we can't find their exact same remarks on a... I guess because John McCain can't work the Google, he thinks the rest of us can't either. Jiminy. But he's right. You know he is. And that hangs in my craw like a bone in the throat to say it. I can assure you the majorities of both parties in both houses would not agree with impeachment either. And he's right. No, only lone voices crying in the wilderness apparently still have any regard for the rule of law in this country. A million dead Iraqis. A million dead Iraqis. How many dead Afghans? Plotting for a war in Iran. And impeachment is off the table. Take a break and come back. Finish up with your phone calls if you want. I've got some other stuff, too, you might find engaging. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. We need all the support we can get. This is The Horn. right, so it's got some dated 80s Soviet references. It's still largely applicable. Jackson Brown, love that song. Eating from TV trays, tuned in to happy days. Waiting for World War III while Jesus slaves to the mating sounds of lawyers in love. And, of course, the mating sounds of lawyers in love cannot help but include the noises made today by David Addington and John Yoo. Why John Yoo still has a law license is simply beyond me. Why somebody has not filed a bar ethics complaint against him. I'm not talking about having him charged with a crime. I'm not talking about having him sued. I'm talking about a state bar ethics complaint against the son of a bitch. Self-made. I don't know why it hasn't been done. It's got to be somebody, you know, he teaches in California. I don't know if he's a member of the bar there, but he is a member of the bar in Pennsylvania. I don't know why somebody hasn't crafted a bar complaint against that filthy punk and gone after his livelihood. Jesus, he's made a fortune out of advocating the torture of other members of the human race. He has made a fortune out of telling the President of the United States that all the laws that are incumbent upon the President, that bind the President, just don't count. He has actively counseled the President of the United States to break the law. Now, if some nickel and dime meat and potatoes lawyer out on Main Street had a client who said, you know, the kids are hungry this week. I'm going to go knock over a convenience store so I can have enough money to buy milk and bread and things like that for my kids. And the lawyer said, fine by me, sounds like a good idea. And the guy went and knocked over the convenience store and got enough, you know, stole enough money to feed his kids with the milk and the bread and stuff for a week. And that came to light. That lawyer would be up before his state bar's ethics committee before he could say boo. And they would yank his law license. John Yoo has said to the President of the United States that the Geneva Convention doesn't apply to a Bush. That federal laws against torture don't apply to a Bush. He has counseled the President of the United States that he can actively break the law. And he's still got a law license. And God knows why. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, boss, what's up?
Nothing. Frustration and, you know. I don't know how long you or how much you guys have been talking about the oil market and speculation and stuff.
Just in passing, frankly, but it deserves mention.
Well, it does deserve mention simply because, you know, all the baloney about, you know, drill in, open up the offshore, do this, conserve, blah, blah, that, you know, all the, it's all a bunch of garbage. This right now, our Congress, our House of Representatives and Senators, if we had a damn leader, could cut the price of gasoline in half within a month by just simply eliminating the speculation market. And you know, it didn't used to be. You know, this is the Enron rule where you can speculate on stuff. You know, these people, they refer to it as they buy video barrels. You know, they have no...
Jesus, that's more fun than the video lottery.
Isn't it? They have no intentions of taking possession of this oil. They don't have any place to put it. You know, when, you know, they could buy $1,000 worth of oil for $50 because all they got to do is put up 5%. It's, you know... It's absolutely ridiculous. Representative Bart Stupak of Missouri, Democrat of Missouri, has presented a bill to prevent unfair manipulation of prices. It's H.R. 6330, which would close the now famous, they call it London loophole, the Intercontinental Exchange Desk at the Atlanta Trading Desk. This would eliminate the traders of video barrels. And, well,
wouldn't that be communism?
I don't give a damn what it is. You know, call it communism, socialism, Bolshevik. I don't care what you want to call it. You know, I mean, these people are, our economy is, well, I know you talked about the stock market today. I mean, you know, this is going to ruin us. These prices are going to ruin us.
Well, Wayne, you know what kind of blows me away out of the whole thing is what you mentioned earlier about buying a barrel of oil for or $1,000 worth of oil for $50 because you've only got to put up 5%. That's buying on the margin, right?
That's what they're doing. Yes.
Yeah.
That used
to
be against the law.
Well, you know, beyond being against the law, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but it was a whole bunch of margin buying that led to the 1929 crash, wasn't it?
That's exactly what it was.
I mean, you know, that's when the brokers went out on the ledge and all of that stuff because
that's how Enron got control of all the electric power in California and kept raising the prices till people could no longer afford. If you remember, didn't California go bankrupt or damn near?
Damn near. They lost a governor out of it.
Yeah, that's how they got rid of Gray Davis. You know, what I'm telling you, you know. Call your representative, email your representative and your senator, and tell them that you know that this is in their hands and that they could fix this tomorrow. That you don't want to hear any more about offshore drilling or all their plans about what they should do and shouldn't do, and tell them to back this House Bill 6330. And then whatever the hell number it gets when it gets to the Senate, make sure they get the call so that they pass it too. And on your way, tell them to get rid of Reid and Pelosi.
Well, hear, hear to that.
My God, this is so, I've just been talking to people and stuff. I'm almost 64 years old. I've been a Democrat all my life. And I will remain a Democrat, but I'm going to tell you what, I'm not so damned proud anymore with the people that we are, that's running this Democratic Party. And that's Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. I mean, you know, this, my God, these people are disgusting. They're the furthest thing from a Democrat that I ever saw. We need FDR Democrats. That's what we need. These people are nothing but corporate shills.
Yeah, they are.
They are.
It is all they are, and the eternal question for the eternal question for us is, how the hell do we what the hell do we do, Wayne? I mean, you and I would be more than happy.
You know, I wonder, like, what do they think they're doing? I mean, the country, you know, I mean, well, we might be heading towards a recession. Recession, my ass. You know, we're heading for another 1929.
Well,
from that?
Some financial analyst today said that the banking houses are saying there's another million foreclosures coming down the road.
Well, and listen, that has to be stopped. When our Congress and legislators could stop that too. You know, you can't. FDR stopped it. You know, you can't throw people out in the street because they can't pay. You can't do that. That has to be stopped. And I'm not saying that people can stop paying, but, you know, we have to stop foreclosing homes. We have to have, people have to have a place to live. We have to, one thing that would really help, which Nancy Pelosi was going to do, you know, was going to try to end the war and cut off funding. And Nancy Pelosi and the House and the Senate could cut off funding tomorrow for this war. That would give us, and there's still enough money left in the pipeline. What the hell? We just gave them, another $160 billion?
Yeah, that goes, that pays us up through, that pays our war credit card debt up through April.
through past April or next April?
This coming April.
Well, good. That's plenty of time. There's the deadline. The money will run out. By the time it runs out, all our guys will be home. And then, you know, let them fight over the sand and decide what the hell they're going to do. And, you know, the hell with our oil companies, you know. I mean, that's what it's all about anyway. You
well,
know,
and that's what I was going to ask, Wayne, in the information that you've got there, who are the people, and maybe this is just a simple question, who are the people that are doing this video barrel speculating?
Wall Street. People with money.
So, I mean, so...
I say $1,000. These people aren't doing $1,000.
No, they're moving millions.
Exactly. And, you know, what, you know, so... If they want $50 million worth, what? They got to put up $2.5 million?
So, well, let me.
If the price goes up $10 a barrel, what, you know, then they sell.
Well, is this Wayne, do you think that this BS speculation, do you think that this is the phony baloney that to the extent it's still being propped up is what's propping up the market?
I'd say that's probably part of it. What the hell's his name? The Enron loophole or the Enron rule. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, do you know who introduced that?
Offhand, I can't.
Graham.
Can't
remember. Great ex-senator from Texas.
Oh, yeah. Phil Graham, yeah.
John McCain's financial advisor. He's the one that introduced that Enron rule. And then it expanded to all energy, not just electricity, but then anything that produces energy, oil, natural gas, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, but beyond that, one of the problems with stuff like this is we have to make it real to people sitting eating dinner in front of their televisions. And what they're doing, they're not just playing with phony money. They're literally the money that they're using, these Wall Street types. You know, who's in Wall Street? Well, there's some tycoons with some big fat portfolios, but at the same time, Wayne, there's a whole lot of people out there with not a lot of money whose 401ks or whatever are tied up in mutual funds, yeah, and that's whose money is being played with.
Well, and pension funds.
Right. And because the Wall Street billionaires, you know, the way you get to be a billionaire is by not throwing your billions away, but spending others.
Yeah, you don't know. You never use your money.
Thou shalt not touch the principal.
You know, now, I mean, one thing that is, they're considered, you know, and I'm going to tell you what, Obama, you know, is off track on a lot of this stuff. I mean, you know, Obama's going to vote for this FISA bill. What the hell is that?
What was this business of coming out and disagreeing with not executing child rapists yesterday? But I mean, there's more. Let's see.
Somebody's statement today or yesterday that the Fed should raise interest rates, you know. The Fed should raise interest rates, but not on everybody. You know, another way to eliminate that is raise interest rate on these speculators. To put the interest rate at 20%, then they won't be able to make money. Then they'll stop doing it. I mean, you know, there was congressional testimony on the 23rd. What's that? Monday? I don't know.
Yeah, that was Monday.
Oversight and Investigation Subcommittee of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. Four industry experts representing energy consultants all agreed under questioning that oil prices could quickly be cut. Excuse me. In half with no harm to producers just by removing the speculative aspect of the market. In half. if you got the oil went up to almost, did it go to $140 a barrel today?
$140.05.
Okay. Half is 70. $70.025, the way I count.
Yeah, you got it right.
Okay, if oil was $70 a barrel, it would seem to me that the price of gasoline would go down real quick. You know, without drilling anymore.
Right, and what you're saying is that the actual price per barrel of oil is $70.
That's exactly what it is. That's exactly what it is.
So we, in essence, all of this has to, is this the final indignity that started with the tax cuts for Bush's buddies, the haves and the have mores, and this is just, you know, the bull in the china shop has run amok, and this is the final slap in the face, you know.
I don't know, but I'm sure there will be plenty of more indignities. You know.
Oh, I try to get a little optimistic, but
no, I know, but I mean. You know, and I mean, that's, you know, I mean, you've been reading, you know, they're about ready to make a deal now, you know, I don't know what, four or five big oil companies, you know, are going into Iraq and no bid contracts. You know, we love those no bid contracts. And, you know, and that's what this war is all about. It was all about from the beginning, and it's not about stealing their oil. Keeping them from producing it—that's the biggest thing to do.
God.
For a long time, because then we could go, oh, supply and demand. You know,
we can only try.
And I'm trying. That's what I'm trying to do. We don't need to, you know. We definitely need an energy policy, you know, one that's open to the public, and Dick Cheney is not allowed to attend, you know. But everybody else's names will be printed, you know, and there'll be testimony, and, you know, it'll all be recorded when we have our new energy policy. But this could be fixed right now by a couple of votes in the House and in the Senate to end the speculation baloney. And, you know, I mean, you look at what this thing is affecting. I mean, everything. How much stuff that people have to buy and purchase is that transported in a truck?
Everything.
So the price of gas and diesel fuel keeps going up. So what else goes up? Everything that gas or diesel delivers.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, and where does it end? I mean, you know, people are talking about, oh, $6 and $8 a gallon gas. You know, well, pretty soon people are going to stop going to work. Well, I went to work 5 days this week and, I made $460 and it only cost me $610 to get there. Next week, I'm not going to go to work.
Yeah, because, see, we don't get to engage in that kind of hoodoo accounting that they do. We get
to play with, you know, when you go to the gas pump and it says $100, you don't get to pay, you know, 50 cents.
No, I don't know.
You get to pay $100.
I don't get to speculate on my gasoline purchases or food purchases or, no.
Yeah. Here's $5. I speculate I'll have the rest of it next week for you.
I can't wait to try that with the next power bill.
Yeah, right. Yeah, see how long your lights stay on. All we can do
is try. I'm sure Nick Rahal's office is sick to death of hearing from me, and Lord knows Rockefeller's office is sick of hearing me, and Bird's office is probably none too fond of me either. But you know what?
God.
I ain't going to shut up.
I'm not going to shut up either. But, you know, email, call your representatives, your senators. It's, you know, H.R. 6330 will end this if they'll pass it. Then, you know, if enough people start yelling, they got to pass it. I'm really frustrated about all this stuff. Because all they do is put out a bunch of smoke and mirrors and, you know, watching C-SPAN and, you know, if, you know, you got to listen to these Republicans and, you know, if tomorrow the Democrats would agree to lift the ban on offshore drilling, the price would go down, you know, immediately. Well, I'm sorry.
Yeah, you know.
That's not true.
I was born at night, not last night.
Right, exactly. That is not true. But I guarantee if they pass this bill and end the speculative oil buying, the video barrel buying, that within 30 days things will be significantly better. If, you know, I mean, you know, and these guys, I mean, these are, I got to trust these guys. They know more about it than me. And four of them, you know.
Yeah.
Get up there and say, cut the price of oil in half.
I know, I know. And I'm trying to maintain some optimism about it. But A, Bush would veto it. And B, even if he signed it into law, the oil companies would appeal it. And Fat Tony and company would nullify it. Boy, I'm in a bad place tonight.
Well, then, you know.
At that point, we're left with pitchforks.
Go out in the streets.
Yeah, pitchforks, you know, and torches.
Or, you know, or don't go out in the streets. Just, you know, nobody go to work. That's all. See how long that would take.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff a general strike would solve.
Yes, it would. Yes, it would.
Indeed. Hey, Wayne, I got to roll out of here, brother.
Okay, pal.
All right, take care.
All right, man. Have a good one.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Nothing to argue with there. HB. I wrote it down. No, I didn't write it. You got it. 6330. Look it up. You'll get it right. Thanks, everybody. Got to get out of here in a hurry. Peter Godbold's on the way with Strictly Confidential. RMR. Gina. It's all for you.